situation calmly. Then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans. One is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. It's been a day of conflicting reports of just who has custody of Saddam Hussein. The Associated Press is reporting a top Iraqi official says he'll be executed before 6 a.m. Saturday Baghdad time. That's 4 hours from now. CBS News Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
The Iraqi government wants to execute him as soon as it possibly can, but the timing has been complicated by the fact that a Muslim holy period is about to begin. And Muslim law, or Iraqi law, excuse me, apparently holds that you cannot execute a Muslim on a holy day. But the issue really is now one of timing. Will Saddam's life last a few more hours or a few more days?
Saddam's attorneys have not only filed an appeal in Iraq, they've also asked a U.S. judge for a stay of execution. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
The argument is that Saddam Hussein is a defendant in a civil case here in the States. And in order to do justice in that case, he has to be given his rights and so forth. I don't think that's an argument that's going to fly. I don't even think it's going to get to the U.S. Supreme Court before it's rejected.
The Detroit area has the largest Iraqi population in the U.S., and WWJ's Ron Dewey has been getting reaction there.
Iraqi Americans in Detroit say Saddam's execution cannot happen soon enough.
Saddam Hussein, he still robbed money. He killed the people. He did too many bad things.
He's guilty for everything.
They did everything, tried to save Saddam, but it's too late.
One resident predicts a celebration in his neighborhood upon word of Saddam's hanging. Ron Dewey, CBS News, Detroit.
In Palm Desert, California, the first church service is for former President Gerald Ford. Let's go there live. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman.
Peter, it began with pomp, hail to the chief, as the casket was removed from the hearse. But for the Ford family, much of this day has been spent in prayer inside St. Margaret's Episcopal Church. The Ford family is still in the church as this private prayer service wraps up. The Fords have been joined by close friends. Once the family leaves, the public will be allowed inside. Mr. Ford's body will lie in repose. The church expects to be open throughout the night. Tomorrow, Mr. Ford makes one last trip to Washington for a state funeral. Live in Palm Desert, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
This is a familiar sound in Denver. Shovelers working hard as the snow piles high in the Mile High City again.
I'm Lee Frank at the Greyhound bus terminal in downtown Denver. A couple hundred would-be travelers have been stranded here since Thursday afternoon because the buses aren't running and might not start running again until sometime Sunday. Greyhound says they apologize for the inconvenience, and if road conditions improve, they'll get the buses moving sooner.
This was Wall Street's last day of trading for the year. The Dow closed down almost 39 points, but finished the year above the 12,000 mark for the first time. This is CBS News.
Okay, team, let's get started.
Now exiting for Hazelnut Serenity.
Introducing Splenda flavor blends for coffee and hazelnut, French vanilla, and mocha. They add delicious flavor that takes you someplace else.
Ah, a yoga retreat with no pie charts. Assume the lotus position and sip. Breathe in tantalizing hazelnut.
Oh,
Margo?
What? Yeah, it's totally zen.
New Splenda flavor blends for coffee. Visit them at hazelnutflavorblends.com. Find them in the coffee aisle.
My husband had a health concern a month ago.
Mr. Thompson, everything looks good.
Oh, thanks, doctor.
It turned out to be nothing, but it got us doing more for our health.
And stretch and bend.
Like morning exercise and taking silver.
Centrum Silver Multivitamin is age-adjusted. It helps protect your health as you age with key antioxidants that help support natural cell repair. Centrum Silver Multivitamin.
Things have sure changed around here.
Our health protection starts with silver.
Take along with a healthy diet and exercise.
The threat of avalanches scrubs the search for an American mountain climber missing in northern China. Reporter Trey Thomas has more from KIRO Seattle.
Dave Jones finds it difficult to speak of his friend Christine Boscoff in the past tense, even though logic tells him she more than likely died on a remote mountaintop in China.
It is difficult to really come to that conclusion until we can bring an end to it by finding her body.
Ironically, Jones was one of the people who decided to suspend the search for Christine, partly because the body of Boskov's climbing companion, Charlie Fowler, was found buried beneath an avalanche.
As winter sets in and the snow grows, the risk of subsequent avalanches just continues to increase.
They're building a new monument to salute the Apollo moon program in Titusville, Florida, just a few miles from the Apollo and Space Shuttle launch pads. But organizers say they need $200,000 more to finish it. And the monument will have a stainless steel Apollo A with globes representing the Earth and Moon connected by the mission's flight paths. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
Thank you for calling for your risk-free trial of Proactive Solution.
Yeah, what's the catch?
Excuse me?
Your ad says I can try Proactive Solution risk-free, and it'll make my acne disappear? Sounds a little too good to be true.
Oh, no catch. We're so sure Proactive will give you beautiful, healthy-looking skin that we're going to let you try it risk-free just to prove it.
Okay, but I've tried a lot of different things for acne before, and they always make my skin itchy and flaky.
Well, that's why Proactive uses soothing spa-quality botanicals along with prescription-grade acne medicine to heal, hydrate, and soothe your skin while eliminating bumps and redness. But there is one thing I didn't mention.
A catch, right?
We're also going to give you a free refining face mask with your risk-free trial.
Wow, it's free?
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Solution and free refining face mask, call 1-800-335-4191. You have beautiful skin under your acne. Let Proactive prove it. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-335-4191. That's 1-800-335-4191.
Developments in the Middle East, then Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst, and he has some opinions a little different from Michael Scheuer. He'll be joining us to talk about some issues. Plus, David K. Johnston, New York Times reporter, the author of Perfectly Legal, is going to talk about some of the shenanigans going on as the IRS has cut well over half of the enforcement attorneys in the estate division. Yeah, the people who enforce the death tax. Could be political. We'll find out. And we're going to spend our final hour today with Larissa Alexandrova, the investigative reporter and managing editor of RawStory.com. And we dispatched Tommy Panic to try to infiltrate the Rupert Murdoch Gabfest along the Central Coast at the Pebble Beach Golf Complex. And if he's successful, he'll join us with a live report sometime later today. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and you're welcome to call whenever the urge strikes you. And as long as the First Amendment is in full effect, my toll-free number is a new one. It's 1-888-5-PETER-B. You got that? 888-5-PETER-B. Or if you prefer all digits, 888-573-8372. Returning to our program today is Gitanjali Gutierrez. She is a staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, where she has been for a year now. I note here that it was last August 1st that she joined CCR. And before that, she was a member of the legal team working on the landmark case at Guantanamo Bay, Razul versus Bush. And Gita joins us this afternoon. Hello. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And it's interesting because it was just, what, Gita, about 3 weeks ago that the Supreme Court, actually a month ago now, the Supreme Court issued its ruling in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. And Michael Ratner, your boss, said it doesn't get any better than this. We talked with one of your other superiors, Bill Goodman, the legal director. And there was, real satisfaction that the Supreme Court had finally seen fit to put some limits on presidential power and prerogative. And now we see a draft piece of legislation surfacing in Washington last week that not only intends to legitimize the illegal actions that have already taken place at Guantanamo Bay and perhaps elsewhere, probably elsewhere, but the draft measure includes applying these detention methods and terms to American citizens. Didn't they learn anything from the Supreme Court decision?
Apparently they didn't learn a thing at all. I think that's what's been most astounding is that a month ago we had our president was saying that he was ready to close Guantanamo. He was waiting for the Supreme Court decision. He recognized the disaster that it's been for the United States. And a month later, he's done a complete turnaround and is getting ready to open a new maximum security facility there and trying to nullify the second Supreme Court decision to strike down the efforts to expand executive power.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the expansion plan at Gitmo. It's a whole new wing.
It's actually a whole entire new prison that's been built there. Halliburton secured a multi-year contract to do a number of construction projects in Guantanamo, and Camp 6 is one of them. It, I guess, is near completion now and would be a brand new prison where they'll be moving individuals into to detain them.
And when will it be completed?
It was supposed to have been completed in July. That was the original date that came from the Public Affairs Office in Guantanamo, and their most recent announcements are that Camp 6 is poised to be opened in September. And it's completely inconsistent with the things that President Bush was saying prior to Hamdan coming down. So either they really, truly don't have a plan for how to operate or exit Guantanamo, or the administration just keeps flip-flopping back and forth depending on what Congress does and whether the courts buy their arguments or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're being a little diplomatic there. Flip-flopping around, in my book, is not telling the truth, dissembling, or flat-out lying. And I believe there have been many efforts to mislead the American public on the true intentions there. Now, I don't understand the need for a new prison, a new whole camp there at Gitmo, because we have drawn down the population, which peaked, what, at 800 or 900 a couple of years ago, and from what they tell us, it's in the 500 range now. Why do they say they need a new facility?
It's beyond me why there needs to be a new facility or even ongoing detentions at this point. And I think that we've gone beyond an illegal prison, and we're now moving into a completely immoral situation in Guantanamo. I just returned a few days ago from spending nearly a month there and met with a number of men who never held a gun against the United States, never fought, men who were staying in guest houses in Pakistan where many young men pass through as they're traveling through the country, and maybe some other man in the guest house is affiliated with Al-Qaeda. But these young men were swept up and have been held in Guantanamo, and they're entering their fifth year of detention. And they are learning of new nieces and nephews that have been born that they've never met. They're learning about their siblings who are graduating from college or going on and starting jobs, and their life is just passing before them. And the idea that we're going to be able to try dozens or hundreds of Al-Qaeda terrorists in Guantanamo in some kind of newfangled military commission is ridiculous, because those men, the terrorists are not in Guantanamo. Those men could not be charged with a crime, and the fact that we're continuing to detain them and may move them into Camp 6, to me, is a real crime.
You're just so soft there, Gita. I can hear it in your voice. These are bad guys. George W. Bush told us they're bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells us, in a way that is so far-fetched and hard to believe, that some of these gentlemen can't be released because if they're repatriated, they might be harmed in their home countries. And I'm sure most of them, if not all, would prefer to take their chances on returning home than to stay in limbo at Gitmo. Additionally, he tries to make the claim that these people have information that could be valuable to us if we can just torture them enough to squeeze it out of them. Now, if they've been there for 5 years, what the hell could they possibly know about the current capabilities or intentions of Al-Qaeda or any other group?
Absolutely. If they ever knew something to begin with, it's not helpful now. And I think we're starting to see the divisions even within the Bush administration. Many of the insiders within the military structure are starting to come out and really announce, whether it's to Congress or to the public, their dissent with what's happening in Guantanamo, the path that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld have gone on. And I think it's because of this. They recognize that there's not intelligence value. They recognize that the men in Guantanamo are not Al-Qaeda terrorists and that the vast majority of them are not fighters. And there's been a number of reports since 2004 that the men in Guantanamo did not have intelligence value and didn't pose a threat to the United States. And this administration refuses to acknowledge the facts and refuses to acknowledge the law.
Yeah. It's just so shameful, and it really hurts me to be an American and see this is being done in the name of making Americans safer. It's a crock, and it undermines our standing both domestically and internationally, and it does feed the fears of many that we've already had a coup in this country. We just haven't recognized it yet.
I would agree with that. We have faced a president right now who is trying to alter the structure of our government to make himself the person who makes the laws, says what the laws are, and then executes the law. And that's not how our government's structured. And he's showing us why we shouldn't have a country like that. The innocent men who are in Guantanamo, who've been detained for so many years, with no basis and no due process tell us why we don't have a dictatorship and why we don't have a kingdom, and that perhaps we should actually try democracy for once in this country.
And Gita, I'm still stunned, circling back to where we started, the draft legislation that has been submitted by the administration to the Senate Armed Services Committee. Debate is supposed to get underway this week. And according to the draft, the military would be allowed to detain all enemy combatants until hostilities cease. And it defines enemy combatants as anyone engaged in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners who has committed an act that violates the law of war and this statute. There is no line drawn to protect U.S. citizens from this bill, which falls well below the constitutional guarantees Americans enjoy.
Absolutely. And there's no, not only does it have limits to protect U.S. citizens, it also does not have any time limits whatsoever. And as far as the administration's concerned, we are engaged in an indefinite global war on terror. And the president wants the power to pick up people all over the world, U.S. citizen or non-U.S. citizen, and be able to detain them indefinitely, perhaps for generations.
Yeah. Gita, thank you for your work. Got about 30 seconds. Anything you'd like to add from your impressions in your month at Guantanamo?
Just that what we're doing there is immoral, and that we are truly destroying the lives of these men and their families. And I hope that Congress and the American public can finally come to their senses.
Visit the website ccr-ny.org. That's the Center for Constitutional Rights. Our thanks to Geetanjali Gutierrez. We'll talk to you again, Gita.
Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure. Coming up next, Marjorie Cohn joins us. She's a professor of constitutional law and a commentator. She'll be joining us next to talk about Hezbollah, Bush's enemy du jour. And you can join us if you'd like, toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the best of Peter B. Collins, pre-recorded. Happy holidays from all of us at the Peter B. Collins Show.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake Elistero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
The days of wine and roses.
The fastest growing disease in America is addiction. It's time we talk about it openly. This is Sheila Gale. Join me Saturday afternoons from 4 to 5 for 12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we deal with addiction. It's about time.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
Then they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. People feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants, but we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
The word Hezbollah is rarely mentioned in a sentence unaccompanied by the word terrorist when you're watching TV or reading about it in the newspaper. And Bush is, they're now speculating on which is a worse terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah. Richard Armitage, who used to be Deputy Secretary of State during Bush's first term, says that Hezbollah might be the A-team of terrorists and Al-Qaeda is actually the B-team. But, you know, although Hezbollah has been suspected of complicity in the 1985 hijacking of a TWA jet, Hezbollah denies ever attacking anybody outside of Lebanon or Israel. And Hezbollah takes responsibility. It's happy to take responsibility for what it does. Hezbollah doesn't even attack other non-Shiite sects of Islam with inside Lebanon. And it's, you know, I am not a fan by any means of Hezbollah, but it's important for us in the United States to understand that in Lebanon, 87% of the Lebanese people support Hezbollah. And this survey was, this is Christians and Sunnis as well as Shiites. This survey was taken by the Beirut Center for Research and Information before Sunday's bombing of Qana, which killed over 60 civilians, mostly children, and has just created outrage throughout the Arab world. And I think it's important for us to understand exactly what Hezbollah is and what it isn't. Israel and the United States make it look like it's a big threat to Israel's security, but Hezbollah, it has a small militia. Israel has the fourth largest military in the world. It's supported by the United States. After it started attacking Lebanon, it asked the United States for more shipments of bombs, and they came right away, including bunker buster bombs, which have depleted uranium on them. Cluster bombs made in the USA are being used there.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the biggest military power in the world, the U.S., arming the fourth largest military power in the world, Israel, and, you know, then leading us to believe that Hezbollah is a big threat to the United States.
And I agree with you that this constant labeling of groups as terrorist is confusing at least and disingenuous at best. And we have Ehud Olmert, the new prime minister of Israel, saying that he's going to continue to attack Hezbollah until the threat of terror is eliminated. Well, I'm sorry. I can see from here that terror is being used by both sides against the other.
You know, there's no doubt that it was illegal for Hezbollah to cross into Israel and kidnap two soldiers. That is a border skirmish, and it comes on the heels of several border skirmishes between the two countries for many years, at least for the last 6 years. But to use that as a pretext to overwhelmingly go in and destroy the country of Lebanon, not just kill so many civilians and wound so many civilians, but really destroy the infrastructure and bomb hospitals and bridges and libraries and apartment buildings, that is disproportionate. You know, I want to clarify something that's been in the media. Israel has said, well, we had to attack Khana because Hezbollah was firing rockets from Khana. Well, Dar Jamal, an independent journalist over there, wrote in an article yesterday that he interviewed Red Cross workers and residents of Khana, and they told him that no Hezbollah rockets had been launched from that city before the airstrikes. And then in the Irish Times, this is very interesting, the Irish Times on the 31st said that the type of missiles being fired by Hezbollah cannot be fired from within houses, mosques, hospitals, or even UN facilities, because due to the massive backblast, they can only be fired from open ground, and most of them are fired from truck mounts.
Right. Somebody sent me an email which was alleged to prove that Hezbollah was operating from residential areas, and it was a picture of an anti-aircraft gun mounted on the back of a truck that happened to be driving through a residential area.
Well, let's
that's
assume,
hardly conclusive.
Okay, let's assume, Peter, for sake of argument, that Hezbollah had been firing rockets from Khana or from other civilian areas. Let's assume that's true, which the evidence doesn't seem to indicate is true, but let's assume it's true. According to Amnesty International, even if Israel verifies that rockets have emanated from a particular location, Israel has to take necessary precautions. In other words, it has to determine whether the objective remains military in character and whether civilians are in the vicinity. And so if Hezbollah fighters fire a rocket and then leave, then there wouldn't be any military advantage to Israel attacking there. And in fact, if Israel does, it could constitute a war crime. Now, Israel says, well, we warned all the civilians living south of the Litani River to leave. But if you look at the evidence, and this has been documented by Robert Fisk, who's lived in Beirut for 3 decades and writes for The Independent.
Right.
He was on Democracy Now! The other day, that there are instances of Israel giving warning to certain to civilians, and then the civilians start to flee and leave the way Israel tells them to, and then their motorcades are targeted.
Right.
And this happened, in fact, I wrote about this in a prior op-ed, that there were several instances of families being killed, being targeted by Israel's so-called smart bombs after they were told to leave.
Right. It really is shameful. And just 30 seconds remaining, your take on Condoleezza Rice's alleged shuttle diplomacy?
You know, I mean, I don't see any real effort here, real bona fide effort to stop the killing and the carnage when she goes back and forth and says, we don't want an immediate ceasefire. Let the carnage continue. That Khana massacre never would have occurred. All Bush has to do is say stop, and Israel would stop.
And I got to stop here. Marjorie Cohn, we'll talk to you again soon. Professor of Law, Thomas Jefferson Law School in San Diego. Read her piece at commondreams.org. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
For whatever legal advice you need,
go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
News terrorism analyst. He brought us the book Imperial Hubris, originally under the name Anonymous, and then went public during the 2004 political season. And he's since published an updated edition of Through Our Enemy's Eyes, Osama Bin Laden, Radical Islam, and the Future of America. Michael Scheuer, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter. You're very kind to have me back. I appreciate it.
Well, you know more than I do, and that's why we keep calling.
I don't know about that. I do the best I can.
Well, you definitely know more than I do, and I appreciate you being available and sharing your knowledge and expertise. One quick question. Ray McGovern's going to be on next hour. Did you and he cross paths at the agency?
Not frequently, sir, but I did know Ray, and I have a great respect for his analytic capabilities and certainly even more for his integrity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the scene in Atlanta about 2 months ago when he was invited to that session where Rumsfeld spoke and he was permitted to ask a question, and then it was characterized as heckling.
he asked Rumsfeld to tell the truth for a change.
Yeah, and he spoke for me. I'm really proud to know Ray McGovern and proud of that particular moment.
It was an excellent moment, sir.
Let me ask you to put on the hat that you were wearing when you wrote the book Through Our Enemy's Eyes, and tell us what we look like from the Hezbollah perspective.
Well, from Hezbollah's perspective, we are almost exactly the same as we're viewed from Al-Qaeda's perspective. We're the master of the Israelis, or at least the force that allows the Israelis to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, to the extent that they want to do it. And I think outside of that, Hezbollah doesn't have much trouble with the United States. Hezbollah is a national organization. It's a political party within Lebanon as well as an insurgent force. And it's very nationalistically oriented. But what Hezbollah sees is our unqualified, unquestioning support for the Israelis. And therefore, we earn much of the enmity that's directed at Israel is directed to us.
Common analysis is that Hezbollah is a proxy for Iran. Does Sheikh Nasrallah see himself in that manner? Is he a toady to Iran?
I think there's very little evidence, sir, and I worked for a while on Hezbollah when I was a younger officer in 92, 93, 94. There's very little evidence that Nasrallah or his lieutenants could be described as toadies in terms of the Iranians.
Well, they take money from Tehran. Do they take orders?
Absolutely. They certainly will take orders in some instances, but they ultimately decide what orders they'll take and what they won't. I think we sometimes forget that Hezbollah has a home address, that if they do something at Iran's bidding against the United States or against another great power, much of their infrastructure that they depend on to exist can be destroyed. So it's not Iran saying jump and Hezbollah saying how high. They certainly have the same view of the United States and the Israelis, but it's not a matter of a slavish reaction to anything Iran says.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, because some people who've been on our program do argue that there's linkage, that, for example, it's not an accident that Hamas chose the moment it did to use the tunnel that they obviously have been preparing for some time to burrow under the border into Israel and snatch the corporal, Gilad, who became the first cause celeb for Israel as it punished the Palestinians as a group for that act. And then the way the story goes, Hezbollah aggravated the Israelis along the Lebanon border. They launched a missile, and Israel then had a skirmish, apparently on the Israeli side. We're still curious about the hard facts there. But many people believe that there has to be some coordination between the events in the occupied territories and the decision by Hezbollah to launch this when it did.
Well, it may be, sir. I think what's lacking is any kind of evidence of that. I think what the president says and what the Democrats say is simply analysis by assertion. We believe it to be the case, therefore it is the case.
Yeah.
There is no doubt that the Iranians through Syria supply arms and weapons to Hezbollah. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's too simplistic and too pertinent to the neoconservative agenda to simply say that Lebanese Hezbollah is a toady for the Iranians.
Mm-hmm. But given the confrontation between the Bush administration and Prime Minister Ahmadinejad and the crew in Tehran, is this a distraction that was initiated by Iran as part of its overall effort in dealing with the nuclear issues?
I don't see how that follows, Peter, simply because this only makes it the war party in the United States who want to attack Iran rather than contain Iran now has another stick with which to beat the Iranians with.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem logical. You know, if you believe Ahmadinejad is a lunatic and is incapable of rational thought, then maybe it makes sense. But, you know, the Persians are not dumb. They've been a world power for two millennia, far longer than we have, and they're very good at international politics. So I don't think that this is a... I don't think we're facing a madman here. We're facing a very difficult character, someone who means us harm, but not an irrational actor.
Mm-hmm. Here's a quote from Richard Armitage, the former Deputy Secretary of State. He said, Hezbollah might be the A team of terrorists, and that Al-Qaeda is actually the B team. Now, given your history, first you worked on the Hezbollah issues, and then you worked on Al-Qaeda at the CIA. Do you agree with Armitage?
No, I think Armitage is all wet on that particular issue, but it's a common view in much of the government. We're the United States of America. We're the most powerful country that ever existed on this earth. Hezbollah is a small Lebanese lethal organization as well as political organization. But if they do anything to the United States, we can put their lights out permanently because we know where they live. If Al-Qaeda detonates a nuclear device inside Houston, Miami, New York, take your pick, what do we do? The greatest power the world has ever known will be standing there quivering with rage and not able to respond in any military fashion. I think Mr. Armitage is just expressing a view that's been expressed almost like a mantra since about the early 90s, sir.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Michael Scheuer here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, he's with us for the remainder of this hour, and you can call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Cynthia joins us from Monterey. Hello, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter and Michael. Worst-case scenario would be that bin Laden would get, like, a dirty bomb or a nuke. But my question is, what do you think is the status of Interpol in the world today at fighting terrorism? Hmm. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Cynthia, thanks. Is Interpol a player?
I think Interpol is a player, sir. I'm not really well versed in the law enforcement aspect of terrorism, but they were helpful on several occasions, I know, to the FBI when we were chasing various of bin Laden's lieutenants. I think they're probably most effective within Europe and not outside of Europe. But I wouldn't denigrate their capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't make them out to be a giant force for good either, but certainly they're competent within their realm.
And, you know, given the way we try to reorganize, and I say tried because I'm not sure how much has actually occurred in trying to, you know, unify our approach and link the FBI with the CIA as called for by the Negroponte appointment and the blueprints of the 9/11 Commission, not all of which I agree with, by the way, but that's their intention. Is the communication from spook to spook? Does the CIA talk to Interpol or only to the you know, the parallel agency in other countries?
My guess is, and it's only that, sir, is that the Interpol connection to the United States is almost certainly through the FBI. The CIA overseas does have contact with both intelligence, security, and police services with individual countries. But I think the Interpol portfolio, if you will, probably belongs to the FBI.
Mm-hmm. There's some stuff out there in the blogosphere that's not all flattering to Michael Scheuer, and I don't know how to evaluate it all because I never worked at the agency and I'm not an insider. But one of the allegations I read in one post on the web was that you had actually limited some information exchanges with the FBI when you were running the bin Laden desk at CIA. And I believe the time frame was, 96 to 99, somewhere.
That's right, sir.
In that
That's
area.
Why I was there, but it's certainly untrue. I don't know. A gentleman named Larry Johnson has been writing some stuff about things he doesn't know anything about, but I can tell you what I told the 9/11 Commission under oath, and that is that there was nothing that I read or any of my three predecessors or successors have read that was not available to the FBI. They read exactly the same electronic traffic that I read, with the single exception of fitness reports for CIA officers overseas.
Hmm.
So people can say what they want, and you can believe me one way or another, but the idea that we were holding information back is incorrect.
Did you have a general mistrust of the FBI?
We had a generally bad taste in our mouth about the FBI simply because Judge Free and now Mr. Mueller mm-hmm. have failed, after spending hundreds of millions of dollars, to provide their officers with a computer system.
Right. Yeah, they're still using the Radio Shack Tandy TRS-40 or whatever.
Well, sir, many times we would try to send information over there electronically, and they would call and say, it's in the system, but we can't pull it up. They would ask us to fax it, we would then fax it, and they would call back and say, it's in the building, but we don't know where, and we would end up couriering it over to the FBI.
Uh-huh.
You know, the working level of the FBI is a very smart, talented, dedicated outfit. But they've been so miserably served by Free and Mueller in terms of simply getting them into the computer age where they could talk to their own offices and to other members of the intelligence community, that's probably still the biggest problem within U.S. intelligence.
Well, and just on the point of the computers, I'm well aware of that. I think we've made three attempts and spent more than $1 billion to try to upgrade FBI computers, and I think they're still at least two generations back.
Yes, sir, and I know that Mr. Tennant, when he was our director, offered to have them just take and duplicate the system that the CIA uses, which allows us to communicate easily and securely with every other component except the FBI,
mm-hmm.
and Judge Free said, no, we're going to invent it here.
Oh, boy. We'll continue in just a moment with Michael Scheuer. If you have a question or comment, there's room for your call. 888-5-PETER-B is my number. That's 888-573-8372, 888-5-PETER-B. We'll be back in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the best of Peter B. Collins, pre-recorded. Happy holidays from all of us at the Peter B. Collins Show.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060.
Tired of that dreaded drive into town for fresh quality produce? The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village has the perfect solution to your problem. Owners Ed Drobnik and Don Bikey have over 50 years of combined experience in the produce business and are passing the substantial savings on to their customers. The Produce Barn offers a wide selection of conventional and certified organic seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. We also carry a fine selection of specialty candies and snacks, exquisite gourmet gift items, and feature Freedom Meats, savory sausages, bacon, and marinated fresh meats. Heck, we even throw in free recipes. So, whether you're a restaurant, lodge, home chef, or treasured village visitor, stop by the Produce Barn at 13750A Center Street in the Center Street Plaza, behind Wells Fargo, and right next to the Chatterbox. We're open 7 days a week.
The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village, 659-5916. That's 659-5916. The Produce Barn.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Both means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies lying before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Recently, that operation has been shut down. First of all, tell us what you can, you know, what's not classified. I understand it was actually a separate office off campus from Langley. Is that right?
For a while it was, yes, sir. And then we came back onto the campus after, I think, about 3 years, two and a half years.
And what reason would there be to be off campus? Did it give you more flexibility, or there just wasn't room at Langley?
No, there was plenty of room, sir, but what it gave us is the opportunity to avoid the distractions of constant bureaucratic meetings, multicultural training, all sorts of distractions that are inherent in any kind of federal bureaucracy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we were put away in a, some people say rightly so, we were put away in a building off campus, and we were able to put the minds of 16 very good people that happened to be in my unit against this target, and I think produced quite a remarkable success.
Mm-hmm. And from what you know, why was this operation disbanded?
I think it's purely for bureaucratic reasons, Peter. Alec Station, our unit, was always an anomaly within the agency, bureaucratically. The agency was set up at the end of World War II in a geographic configuration. Some people covered Asia, some people did Latin America, others did Africa. And we were the first unit that was ever set up to chase one particular man in one group. And we didn't fit into the normal chain of command. We weren't under the control of any geographic division, and that did not fit very well at all with the senior bureaucrats at the agency. But we reported directly through the chief of the Counterterrorism Center to the DCI, and so there was not much that the bureaucrats could do about it. And as I said, in the 10 years that this unit existed, it was very successful. And it was always causing a great deal of heartburn within the bureaucracy, and I simply think that the bureaucrats took advantage of the distraction of the government and the public on things like Iraq, wire or surveillance in the United States, the whole business about bank records, to remove a source of bureaucratic heartburn and make the world more comfortable for themselves. When the president said he didn't know anything about it, I think that's perfectly possible.
Mm-hmm.
In that it's the kind of a bureaucratic maneuver that lacks any political sense and wouldn't come to the attention of the president or his lieutenant.
And what do you think the bottom line is in terms of the safety, security of the American people and our efforts to find, capture, or kill?
It's, It's a negative in the sense that we have opted for bureaucratic comfort, bureaucratic tradition over an innovation that provided a cadre of officers who had worked for most of a decade and who had a view of what Al-Qaeda was up to in a worldwide manner. What they've done is take the unit and now distribute it into the traditional geographic arrangement. Some people watch Africa, some people watch the Far East, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you don't have a core unit that follows Al-Qaeda and bin Laden and is knowledgeable about it around the world. You don't have a set of people who can tell if something happens in Albania, is it or isn't it connected to what's going on elsewhere within Al-Qaeda's organization.
Michael Scheuer, in today's Washington Post, a remarkable story by Dan Egan, citing the head of the 9/11 Commission, former governor of New Jersey, Tom Kaine, that he thinks the Pentagon lied to the 9/11 Commission about what really happened at the Pentagon on 9/11. Did you see that story? And do you have...
I did not see it today, sir, no.
Okay. Do you have any doubts yourself about the official report of the 9/11 Commission and how it squares with the physical evidence?
With the physical evidence, sir, I'm not competent to comment. I think that, you know, what I know about the physical attacks I saw on television, I don't know any discrepancies to what I saw, but I know the 9/11 Commission certainly pulled punches in terms of finding culpability amongst the senior leaders of the intelligence community. They couldn't find anyone to criticize for anything. And I know at least a dozen officers, including myself at CIA and from other agencies, testified under oath about problems that could and should have been corrected before 9/11 and were not. But none of that testimony made it into the final 9/11 Commission report.
Mm-hmm. Well, in simple terms, and I'm certainly not a physicist or anything like that, but I don't believe that an airliner actually crashed into the Pentagon and then disintegrated, leaving no trace of the engines, the tail section, or anything like that. The hole in the side of the building is not big enough for a 757 to have slid in there and disappeared, and yet the photographs, the selective photographs that we've been shown, don't really support even the official story.
Well, it's very clear, sir, you know more about this than I do. I have read some stories other than the one you cited today speculating that it was not an aircraft that crashed into the building, but I'm afraid I just don't know the answer to the question.
Mm-hmm. Understood. So about a minute remaining, Michael Scheuer, as you look at the landscape in the Middle East right now and the way the United States has responded to date, blocking attempts to impose a ceasefire and essentially blocking for Israel to buy more time, do you think this is going to turn out with the kind of results that Israel hopes for? In other words, can military power and air power in particular decimate Hezbollah in the way Israel hopes?
No, sir. Hezbollah is a popular political group as well as a terrorist and insurgent organization in Hezbollah. Unless the Israelis annex all of Lebanon and proceed to root out Hezbollah wherever it is in that country, they're never going to succeed. And the idea that I think that's what they've realized, and they're now calling for this multinational force, which will eventually, if it's formed and goes in there, will eventually be fighting probably both Israel and Hezbollah. This is not going to work out the way the Israelis think it's going to, sir.
Mm-hmm. Michael Scheuer, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
It's always my pleasure, sir. You're very kind.
All right, we'll talk again soon. Michael Scheuer, formerly with the CIA, now a terrorism analyst for CBS News. His most recent book is Through Our Enemy's Eyes, and it's a powerful read. I recommend it to you. Coming up next, Chris Tonsing with our daily update on the conflict in the Middle East. Then Ray McGovern, another former CIA analyst, will join us right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And David K. Johnston from the New York Times coming up in about a half an hour from now. Stay tuned.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Where is Saddam Hussein and when will he be hanged?
Will Saddam's life last a few more hours or a few more days?
And the memorial services are underway for Gerald Ford.
The long goodbye begins in California. I'm Steve Futterman in Palm Desert.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. Saddam Hussein awaits execution. Once he's handed over to the Iraqis in Baghdad, he could be hanged within minutes. CBS News correspondent David Martin is following this story from the Pentagon.
The latest is that Saddam remains in an American jail cell still awaiting execution. The Iraqis have legal custody of him since he was tried and convicted in an Iraqi court, but the U.S. military still has physical custody of him. That could change at any moment, and once it does, his execution could follow in very short order. In fact, he could go straight from his jail cell to the gallows.
And CBS News has learned he won't be alone. Joining him will be his half-brother, Barzan al-Takriti, who was Saddam's intelligence chief, and former judge Awad al-Bandar, all convicted for their role in the deaths of 150 Shiites in the town of Dujail back in 1982. Security will be very tight, not just in Baghdad, but in Sunni-dominated areas of the country.
They anticipate that there will be some kind of violence. Saddam is a Sunni, so some of the Sunni insurgents might lash out either against the coalition, the American troops, or against Shiites, who are the faction that is now in power in Iraq. But frankly, the level of violence in Iraq is so high that it may be hard to notice a spike.
Saddam's lawyers, meanwhile, have filed a last-minute appeal here in the U.S. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
I don't think that any judge in America is going to want to get involved in this case at this time, to get involved into domestic Iraqi law and to stop an execution that, according to Iraqi law, is on the level. So I don't think this has any chance of succeeding.
An Iraqi official now says Saddam could be executed before 10 Eastern time tonight. Now this.
Hello, I'm George. Every year about this time, my wife gets concerned about my rowdy and crazy behavior. I can't help it. Happy Honda Days gets me all giggly and rambunctious. Hurry to your Honda dealer today and get an awesome deal on the 8-passenger Pilot, the ultra-functional Element, or the innovative Ridgeline. Yeah, baby. Happy Honda Days. It's going off, dude. Seriously.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for watching my kids.
Good timing. I'm making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ooh, my kids love chocolate milk.
So do mine, but I didn't make it for them. This Ovaltine's for us.
Really?
Hey, adults love the taste, too. Plus, I drink rich chocolate Ovaltine every day because it's high in calcium and antioxidants like vitamins A, C, and E. Ovaltine even has iron I need, which I can't get from Nesquik powder or milk alone.
Mmm, Ovaltine is good.
And it's loaded with vitamins and minerals. Nesquik powder doesn't come close.
More Ovaltine, please.
The U.S. government's warning Americans to be vigilant in the aftermath of Saddam Hussein's execution. Reporter Tom Foti has more from Washington.
There are no specific tips, but the FBI and the Homeland Security Department are urging local law enforcement agencies to be on the lookout for possible terror threats. The advisory was issued after the final sentencing of Saddam to hang. In Europe, security officials have been on a higher alert after several alleged terrorist plots were set to have been stopped. The FBI Homeland Security Advisory urges vigilance, but is labeled routine.
Paying tribute to a president, memorial services for Gerald Ford have begun. Here's correspondent Steve Futterman.
It began with pomp. As the flag-draped casket was removed from the hearse, a Marine band played Hail to the Chief. 88-year-old Betty Ford, looking frail and solemn, watched with her children as the body was brought into the church. The Reverend Robert Certain said a prayer.
With faith in Jesus Christ, we receive the body of our brother Gerald for burial.
Tonight, the doors of the church will remain open. Mr. Ford will lie in repose. Members of the public will be able to pay their respects. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Palm Desert, California.
I'm Peter Mayer on Capitol Hill. The Great Rotunda, scene of so much history, will once again be the scene of national mourning. Workers have already moved the famous Lincoln catafalque to this huge chamber in the heart of the Capitol building. President Ford's coffin will rest on the same rough-hewn pine platform that was built for the Abraham Lincoln casket in 1865. Following tomorrow evening's service here, the public will be allowed to pay respects to the nation's 38th president.
This is CBS News.
Deck the halls with
boughs of holly.
Ah, the sounds of TomTom portable navigation devices singing in sweet harmony. And now through the holiday season, if you buy any TomTom, you get $100 off.
$100 off.
It's the TomTom Give event. You give a TomTom, we give you $100 off any model at any retailer. So give the best portable everyday GPS solution. Heck, give two. TomTom, find your way the easy way.
$100 off.
You have a cold and high blood pressure. What cold medicine do you choose? Before you decide, Quercetin HBP has some important news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants in most cold medicines can raise your blood pressure. So why take them? Quercetin HBP offers a full line of decongestant-free cold and flu medications that won't raise your blood pressure. So make a smart choice. Choose Quercetin HBP.
Listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, where we favor electric guitars and progressive politics. Coming up before the end of the program today, we're going to talk to the Democratic nominee for governor of California, Phil Angelides. This hour, we're going to spend with one of my favorite journalists, Robert Scheer, has been at it for a long time. So long, in fact, that he has had one-on-one interviews with every president since Richard Nixon, except for the current occupant of the White House. And those interviews have been republished in the book Playing President with a lengthy subtitle, My Close Encounters with Nixon, Carter, Bush, Reagan, and Clinton, and How They Did Not Prepare Me for George W. Bush. Robert Scheer's column, his weekly column, is syndicated by the San Francisco Chronicle, and he bought a printing press recently in the form of truthdig.com. Bob Scheer, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Where are you?
I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh.
At my secret studio, which we have recently upgraded, and we have hardened bunkers here to prevent interlopers. And where do we find you today, Bob Scheer?
I'm in Berkeley.
All right, great. Well, I want to talk about your book, Playing President. There's so many fascinating aspects of it. But first, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the current situation in the Middle East. Your most recent commentary reads, Israel's dependency on the drug of militarism. Talk a little bit about that concept and whether there's a 12-step program that we can develop.
Well, you know, the enablers of the Bush administration, that's the real problem here. And I think Israel's going to be, is already a big loser in this. I mean, the people, and I've got plenty of friends who tried to argue this, that somehow the neoconservatives were going to help Israel. And I think with friends like that, you don't need enemies. I mean, these guys have told the people in Israel, the leaders, go, give a green light. This is your chance. You don't do it now, you're not going to have another chance. And it's been an absolute disaster, in much the same way that Iraq is a disaster. And one of the great ironies in this is they claimed they were going to, you know, make the Mideast safe from terrorists. You know, they were going to deny the terrorists a haven. And there, you know, in Iraq was the one place that Shiite militants, terrorists, whatever you want to call them, couldn't find a haven. And now you have a situation where Hezbollah has its main base of support in the Arab world in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And the Iraqi parliament unanimously condemned what they called Israeli aggression. The Iraqi leaders last week had a strong statement. There was a big demonstration, the biggest demonstration in the Arab world in support of Hezbollah has been in Baghdad.
Yeah, and that was remarkable given the security situation there.
Yeah.
Thousands of people felt comfortable to go out and protest in the streets.
Yeah, and you know, they were sort of dismissed that they're the followers of Muqtada Sadr, so that doesn't mean anything, but he happens to represent the most important element in the coalition that we have put in charge of Iraq.
Well, and kind of like Hezbollah, he's got his own militia.
Yeah, and they're following a model that, you know, pretty much was fashioned in Iran, which we call the Rogue Nation, and we had backed Saddam Hussein against Iran, you know, during a decade of war, and now suddenly we have a situation where the disciples of the Ayatollahs in Iran are in power in Iraq, and this arc of their power extends from Lebanon to Baghdad to Tehran. It's really quite startling, and whatever else you think about the situation, it's pretty difficult to argue that this has somehow helped Israel.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute disaster, and that's why I use the drug analogy. I mean, sure, you know, you tell people now's the time, you can take out your enemy, you've got a green light, you know, we've given you the bombs, you got great technology, and go for it, and then you're up against this firestorm of you know, that's been ignited, really, by U.S. policy in the region.
Well, after all, Bob, this is a triumph of unilateralism and preemptive attacks.
Well, yeah, and basically, this is an administration that turned its back on the admittedly difficult process of making peace. No one ever said that's easy. And every president from Truman on out, you know, was committed to negotiating a peace. And at least we've had progress in many ways. And then this administration came in and they just dropped the whole approach, just dropped it. And they had a different approach. They were just going to make new facts in the Middle East. They were going to overthrow regimes. They were going to, democracy was going to flower. And Iraqi oil, by the way, was going to pay for all of it. And I think prices of oil today are higher than they've ever been.
Well, and to use a coinage of the president, didn't they misunderestimate the real issue, which is the unresolved conflict between Israel and its neighbors? That's what is driving Osama bin Laden and most of the people who oppose the United States.
Well, I think there are many problems, and religious fanaticism on all sides. You know, Muslims are not the only ones who are fanatical. We have Christian fanatics, and it was, by the way, an Israeli fanatic who killed Yitzhak Rabin, the great peacemaker and former general. So we have religious forces welling up all over the place in a return to real primitivism, including in our own society, where Darwin is now a suspect figure. So we've played the religion card, and we thought, you know, we started, as my book, The Playing Precedent book, indicates, even with Jimmy Carter going into Afghanistan and making that a whole big thing and inviting all these freedom fighters to come there and take on the Soviets. So it's not new. It just was escalated by this administration. And ignoring nationalism. I mean, nationalism is an important force, and you just don't go in and occupy people. It produces the opposite result. The best occupiers you've ever had, I think, maybe in human history, have been the Israelis. At least the way they started out. I was there at the time of the end of the Six-Day War. I was both Egypt, and then I went over to Israel. I was in West Bank and Gaza, and the people who were doing the Israeli occupation were probably the most enlightened of occupiers. People like Moshe Dayan, they knew Arabic, they knew the area. He was an archaeologist. He knew, was very familiar, and they wanted to be good occupiers. 70% of the Israeli officers had come from the kibbutz movement. They were quite idealistic. They said, "No, we're gonna go in and do it a different way, and democracy will spread and flower, and we'll get along." And it just doesn't work that way. People have to make their own history, and you have to be sensitive to their nationalism, their religion, their parochialism, their ethnic complexity. And all of that was ignored by the Israelis in holding on to that land. And the same thing they repeated when they went into Lebanon and had their 18-year experiment, which was a disaster. They're repeating it now in Palestine where, you know, they wanted Hamas. Originally, Israel even favored Hamas over the PLO. And, you know, and then you have an election, and these elections turn out because of nationalist and religious feelings to go against you, as they did in Lebanon, as they did in Palestine, as they did in Iraq. And so that doesn't turn out to be the answer. Oh, let's just have elections here. There's a limit to how you can manipulate those elections. And in the end, you're faced with the thing of how do you get along with people who have different attitudes, different culture, different religions than you do, and it's not easy. And it involves painstaking, patient work of the peacemaker. It is not aided. It is dramatically assaulted by military power. It doesn't work.
And let me quote the columnist Robert Scheer from your column last week. It is true that the Israeli withdrawals of the past half decade, nearly complete in the case of Lebanon and cynically minimal in the Palestinian territories, did not resolve all the disputes or stop all violence. Yet the abandonment of the peace process and the renewed reliance on bombs will prove far more costly for Israel. Long after Bush is gone from office, Israel will be threatened by a new generation of enemies whose political memory was decisively shaped by these horrible images emerging from Lebanon. At that point, Israelis attempting to make peace with those they must coexist with will recognize that with friends such as Bush and his neoconservative mentors, they would not lack for enemies.
Yeah, you know, there's no fun being right about these things. You know, since I wrote that column around last Wednesday, I'm sitting here, and the death toll mounts and the destruction and of everything, of infrastructure, of people's lives, the threat to Lebanon, the threat to Israel, the innocents on both sides of the border that are caught up in this. And I think, you know, the Israeli public at first supported it. Most people support these military adventures at first. I think there's now a recognition that it's not working, that it's a disaster. And I suspect, by the way, that the Israelis are going to be sold out by their neocon buddies. Because they really have got to end this. They have to have some kind of ceasefire, and if the Arab League has its way, the Israelis will be totally out of Lebanon, and so they won't have gained even a few miles, and they're going to do that because the Bush administration has larger plans for the Mideast, and those plans have been very seriously undermined by this.
Yeah. Robert Scheer, we're going to take a break and return. We're going to talk about your book, Playing President. Robert Scheer's had one-on-one interviews with every president since Richard Nixon, except the current guy in the White House. We'll talk about that legacy coming up next. If you have a question or comment, jump on the line now. He's with us this hour. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. That's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. You're listening to the best of Peter B. Collins, pre-recorded. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Just arrived. Carmel, a treasure. A first combination calendar, history book with souvenir maps, archiving Carmel today. Entirely rendered in watercolors by Lisa Bryan, this brilliant calendar and book combo captures the charm of Carmel. a special gift now available at Lisa's Studio in Court of the Fountains and other bookstores and gift shops in Carmel. For more information, call Lisa Bryant at 626-5435, 626-5435.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
I was hosting a late-night talk show in Chicago
at our convention
when Richard Nixon hit the wall.
A campaign.
The Watergate wall.
The USA. Let me make this perfectly clear. Let me stick it in your ear. They said, hey, babe, make a date with the Watergate. My fellow Americans, I said, hey, honey, make a date with the Watergate. And Martha Mitchell says...
Martha Mitchell. She made my day more than once. Yes, I have to give credit to Tricky Dick Nixon because it was his demise that created my ascendance. I was a young man who was given a late-night talk show in Chicago just at the time that the Watergate hearings got underway, and it became our cause célèbre. And so I tip my hat to Richard Nixon because, he really gave my career a big boost. And Robert Scheer is our guest this hour. In his book, Playing President, he tells the story of his post-Watergate encounters with Richard Nixon, who had retired to San Clemente and apparently was getting daily delivery of the Los Angeles Times, where Robert Scheer was writing at that time. Bob, tell us a little bit about your exchanges with Nixon.
Can I just correct your fact there?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
He was, when I interviewed him, he was in his office in New York, and he was living in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
But his friends in California had evidently sent him my my article, and it was interesting. I wrote it in 84, and I did a retrospective on Nixon, and I said, you know, because Reagan was president, and I wanted to look at, well, how does Nixon look now? And I went and got the whole record and everything, and decided, my goodness, compared to Reagan, Nixon was pretty enlightened. Well, compared to George W. Bush, Nixon was a flaming liberal.
Yeah.
You know, he believed in a guaranteed annual income. Now, even our last Democratic president destroyed the welfare system and destroyed the federal obligation to poor people, Bill Clinton. So here was Richard Nixon, who had Patrick Moynihan on his staff and embraced the idea of guaranteeing a minimal income to every American, you know,
mm-hmm.
an affluent society, and no one should starve or be in the streets. And anyway, that now would be seen as, you know, some wild communist idea.
Right. He was the guy who signed the EPA into existence.
Right.
The first Earth Day occurred under his watch. The opening to China.
Well, the opening to China was a big deal. That's where the Cold War really comes apart.
because it was Richard Nixon who, you know, and he could only do it having been such a fierce red baiter in his day.
Right.
But Nixon, who, and he came across this idea. This is how I endeared myself to Nixon, a dubious claim, I know, to some of the people listening to this. But I researched it and concluded that Nixon had this idea of opening to China before he was president. He wrote an article in Foreign Affairs, and it was before he had actually met Kissinger. And that he developed this idea that communism was nationalist, and it was fragmented, it was complex, and there weren't two communist regimes in the world that were getting along with each other, you know, and they were shooting at each other across the, you know, the Russian communists and the Chinese communists were shooting at each other across their border and everything, and the Vietnamese communists, the Chinese communists had 1,000 years of national animosity to base their, you know, estrangement on. And so Nixon figured out, hey, we'll just, you know, we'll do detente with the Soviets and we'll open to China and we'll create a new day for capitalism. And he was absolutely right. You know, the Chinese communists, is interesting now that we fight this war on terror, and we don't really want to figure out who are these terrorists and how do they operate and what are their divisions. You know, we've got them all lumped together, the Sunnis and the Shiites and anyone in the world we don't like, they're just terrorists, you know, and whether they've been in elections or not or whether they blow things up or what have you, you know, they're all the same. And it's like the old sort of Dr. No kind of image of a convenient enemy. And that was the international communist conspiracy and its timetable for the takeover of the world. And Nixon saw it was nonsense, and he made that opening. And what was the result? You know, yeah, we got people say you can't leave Iraq. What are the terrible things that will happen? Well, we left Vietnam under the most ignominious of circumstances. And what happened? The Vietnamese communists and the Chinese communists fight for, you know, shelf space at Walmart and Costco. You know, they're still communists, but they're out there producing everything from shirts to now cars and computers. And, you know, so Nixon understood that, and yet, unfortunately, and that's why the book is called Playing President, you can't count on adults watching the store. You know, this guy's the worst, but the others haven't been any great bargain. And even though Nixon understood that the Vietnam War made no sense at all, he still got millions of people killed, including quite a few Americans, over it, escalating it, and dragged Cambodia into it with, you know, disastrous results for the Cambodian people. So he did that, you know, and I'm not trying to absolve him of it. But he did break the Cold War, because once you accepted that communism was nationalist, you couldn't just be fighting anyone anywhere in the world and say that's a communist, because then you had to ask the question, well, which side are they on, and can you do business with them, and can you trade with them, and that's when it all fell apart.
And Nixon was very concerned about how history would treat him. When you talked to him about the secret bombing of Cambodia, was he defensive, or did he have what you felt was a rational explanation?
Well, you know, Nixon was only talking to me because he knew that he wasn't being judged kindly, and he wanted to present. He was happy to have a more complex view. I only got to interview Nixon after he read my articles, and I even have a blurb from Nixon on the back of the book thanking me for my objective coverage of his activities, you know. And I was very pleased, by the way, John Dean, who's the guy I most respect among the writers now in the country on the presidency.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's got a better brain.
Worse than Watergate, his recent book.
Well, not only that, well, actually, he's got a new one out now on the how the conservatives have been betrayed by Bush, you know, and John Dean, who was only 30 years old when he told Nixon, you have a cancer on the presidency, and no one would have believed him. Historically, Dean would have been judged very harshly, but there were tapes, and it turned out Dean was right in making that claim, and he's really the hero of Watergate. Anyway, recently Dean wrote a review of my about the Playing President book, and I was really thrilled that he liked the book and thought he had some real insight, because I thought, you know, if there's anybody who had a right to be angry with Nixon, it's John Dean.
Yeah.
And my book, Nixon comes across better than Carter.
Yeah.
You know,
Bob, just about 30 seconds to our next break. Have you gone to that warehouse in Virginia to listen to the Watergate tapes?
Oh, yeah. No, I've got copies of the Watergate tapes, and I listen to them a lot. And, you know, it's funny. I worked on Oliver Stone's movie with my son Christopher. We wrote a chunk of that. And, you know, we were attacked at the time for presenting too harsh a view of Nixon as a drunk and, you know, obscenity and anti-Semitic and everything. At that time, we only had a couple hundred hours of the tapes. Now, we know he was all of those things.
Very well
faith
put.
Faith in space.
And next time you go to Washington, D.C., listeners, as a tourist, drop in. It's a warehouse in Virginia. You can listen to any tape that's available there. It's fascinating to look at our history. Robert Scheer will continue in just a moment. The book is called Playing President, and you're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Advice from beyond the grave. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It was one of the stranger sidebars to a former president's death. The story that Gerald Ford had taped an interview about Iraq with Bob Woodward on condition that his remarks be withheld until after his death, which is why we didn't hear until Thursday that Ford thought very strongly that the invasion of Iraq was unjustified and that he blamed Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. Quote, "I just don't think we should go hellfire damnation around the globe freeing people unless it's directly related to our own national security," unquote. Mr. Ford made the tape in July of 2004. When it could have been part of the election debate, but the voters never heard a word. Maybe he worried that he'd have been swift-voted, labeled as the president who lost Vietnam. Yet, as a respected Republican ex-president, universally praised for his decency, his opinion would have been impossible to ignore. More likely, he didn't want to embarrass a fellow president, at least not while he was alive. Isn't that always the way? So much of what we do is about saving face, and presidents are no different. Earlier this year, the tapes of another former president were released. LBJ, who is also stuck in a war he knew wasn't necessary.
"I'm willing to do damn near anything."
But he had to save face.
"I can't get out. I just can't be the architect of surrender."
That conversation with Senator Eugene McCarthy took place in 1966, at a time when 95% of the names on the Vietnam Memorial were still alive. The voters of the time never heard a word of it. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
The holiday season is here again, and what perfect time to take advantage of the great selection and low prices of the finest used cars in the county. At ZNS Auto Dealership in Monterey, they have been partners for over 30 years. Located at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard, ZNS wants to be your partner in choosing that right car for you or your loved one. ZNS has it, whether it's a truck, SUV, minivan, compact, or luxury automobile. Open every day on Del Monte Boulevard, Monterey. ZNS Auto, where partnership works.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Do it.
Let's continue our conversation with journalist Robert Scheer. We're talking about his newly released in paperback book, Playing President, My Close Encounters with Nixon, Carter, Bush 1, Reagan, and Clinton, and How They Did Not Prepare Me for George W. Bush. As we mentioned, Robert Scheer is a syndicated columnist whose weekly rants are published by the San Francisco Chronicle and distributed to newspapers across the country. And he founded TruthDig.com over the last year. And this book is this your first on the TruthDig publishing imprint, Bob?
I'm published by Akashic, which is a great publisher that did the five biggest lies Bush told us about Iraq, that
sure.
Son Christopher and Lakshmi Chandran did, and I helped them. It's a small publishing venture, but the book seems to be doing well, and so TruthDig is the party to that, but he basically brought the book out.
And full disclosure, are you the owner of TruthDig? Or
a part owner, you know. A.J. Liebling once said the freedom of the press is guaranteed only to those who own one,
mm-hmm.
and I own half of one, and along with Ray Kaufman, my publisher, who used to work with me, and it's great. We've had, close to 4 million people now have visited us, and we get a pretty, you know, people should check it out. There's a lot of good stuff on there, including, you know, right now we have very good material on the Mideast. You know, Chris Hedges, who was the New York Times bureau chief, writes for us, and Gorbadal, a lot of people. You know, it's a good site.
It's an excellent site, and I try to drop in at least once a week. It's truthdig.com, so bookmark or favorite, whatever you like to call that, and drop on by. Now, take us to Plains, Georgia. In the early 1970s,
you get the lust in your heart. That's,
well, we got to find out.
That's all you guys want is the lust part.
All right, but you didn't explain. You tell us this sequence that you went to a movie with Jimmy Carter, the Lenny movie, and somebody said, Gerald Rafshoon said, "Mr. Governor, do they have oral sex in Plains?" And he's quoted as saying, "Yeah, they don't call it that, but you don't tell us what they do call it in Plains." I mean, what did Billy Carter call it?
I don't know. I'm not going to get in trouble here. You know, I was on a show in San Diego, and a television show, and the station magazine came up to me and was really angry after the show. And I had no idea what the FCC permits or doesn't permit.
Right.
And I said, you know, my favorite bumper sticker these days, and now I can't say it because I don't want to get you in trouble. But
Would somebody please give the president a blowjob?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're allowed to say that. It's not on the list.
I know it's not on the list. Well, the station manager down there just went livid, you know, and, oh, how can you do that? And this is a family station. I said, well, you know, you teach the Clinton over this, you know, and here Bush has committed all these crimes. And so, you know, I think that bumper sticker says a lot.
It sure does.
But about Jimmy Carter, you know, the good thing, when I interviewed him for Playboy, I was doing a profile. They only consented to the interview because he was running it. Everybody forgets that the first national politician in our modern history to wear the born-again Christian thing on his sleeve was Jimmy Carter.
Right.
And he was doing it to give himself cover because Democrats in the South were under attack because his whole family values, normal American garbage came in, really through Nixon. It was Nixon's Southern strategy. How do we split white voters away from the Democratic Party in the South? Well, we can't play the race card overtly because that will alienate what was still moderate Republicans. There used to be some of those around, you know, and particularly in the North.
Yeah.
So you can't be overtly racist. So you're going to talk about family values and normal Americans and good, God-fearing Americans and all that kind of stuff, you know. So Jimmy Carter embraced that and said, hey, I'm one of them. I go to church all the time. I pray all the time. And he was going around campaigning about that, and Ben said, wait a minute, do you believe Scripture has literally reveals all truth, and are you going to impose this on Americans, and what about a separation of church and state? And so they then said, let's do the Playboy. They agreed to my request to do a Playboy interview,
mm-hmm.
just to set it straight with, you know, Democratic voters, who were then quite concerned about Jimmy. And I think his answer on the lust thing and all that stuff was very, very good. I mean,
yeah.
He said, you know, the reason he was saying that I've lusted is because he was saying, you know, we all have these struggles, and we mm-hmm. have to figure out our relation to God and the deity and et cetera, and in a personal way. After all, that's what the Protestant religion is supposed to be about, you know,
mm-hmm.
listening to some priest to give you the truth. You got to struggle with these things. And he gave a very sensible answer to that, and I didn't think it was going to be the big scandal of the election that it was. I thought what he said when I asked him, aren't you really, I would have said then, but I didn't know it, aren't you a future Joe Lieberman?
Ha ha ha!
Frank, you know, one of these hawkish Democrats,
right.
You know, and because he was talking that way, and we mm-hmm. didn't have Scoop Jackson around. Yeah, everybody forgets people like Pearl and Wolfson. They come out of the Democratic Party. You know, they come out of the Scoop Jackson. You know, the Democrat
senator from Washington. Yeah.
Yeah, they give you. Well, he was a senator from Boeing. They used to call him. And you know, they had this little. You know, if all those Democrats gave us the Vietnam War, you know, and they were considered pretty militaristic, and so. Carter was talking a lot like that, and he'd been, you know, in the Navy, the nuclear submarines and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was asking about that. I said, you know, are you going to get us into another Vietnam? And he said, no. And I said, why not? Because he said, I wouldn't lie the way Lyndon Johnson did.
Right.
Well, that was real news, you know, Democrat. And by then he'd gotten the nomination. So here's the Democratic candidate saying, I'm not going to lie, like the previous Democratic president. And Lady Bird wouldn't meet with him when the plane landed in Dallas. I was there as a press person on a press plane. And she was furious, and I thought that was, you know, that would provoke a good discussion, and I mm-hmm. wish it had, because Jimmy Carter, as president, he's been a great ex-president,
yeah.
and I question that. He's been the best ex-president we ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But as president, I think he was he was a disaster.
Well, and let me ask you a couple of pointed questions,
sure.
because I really appreciated that Jimmy Carter tried to articulate a foreign policy based on human rights. I thought that was a major breakthrough. And then he embraced the Shah and allowed him to come to the U.S. for medical treatment. He embraced the Marcos regime and allowed Ferdinand Marcos to exile to the United States, both of which created complications. And he's the one who inserted U.S. covert forces in Afghanistan.
Well, they weren't so covert. I mean, what happened there was he got in trouble. You know, it's all very well and good to talk about human rights, and we should talk about it, but the point is that he was, they always make foreign policy a hostage domestic political issues. That's what always happens. They really don't care about the rest of the world. I don't care who they are. American presidents that, since Roosevelt, you know, Roosevelt's my last hero, the rest of them make foreign policy a hostage to domestic issues, and even Roosevelt did that for a while, but then he realized he was up against a big thing in the world called fascism, and he better get serious. And but, you know, the trouble with Carter, he was in trouble because the Ayatollah had come in and they were, you know, the hostage crisis,
right.
And he didn't know what to do about it. And it's very revealing in my book, which is, by the way, more than interviews. You know, there's a lot of profiles and
a lot of columns, yeah.
You know, but stuff I've written recently. And when I went back to work on the book, I found an interview I'd done with Bob Dole in 1980, and Dole was going to make a run for the presidency. And Dole told me, I interviewed him for the L.A. Times, and he said, "What's this whole Afghanistan thing about? The Russians have been there, and they've always had influence there, and they've been there for 7-8 months. And why are they bringing that up?" Now, they're bringing it up because they got the hostage. They're trying to take attention away from the hostage crisis and from the economy and everything else that's going wrong. And so suddenly they say, wait, we're in a new Cold War in Afghanistan, which was garbage, and we're not going to go to the Olympics. Remember the Moscow Olympics?
I do.
And we're
yeah.
going to back these freedom fighters there. And that's where the whole 9/11 thing starts.
Yeah.
This utter absurdity, you know, that we're you know, you have the secular guys in Kabul, and they're trying to bring about some change. No, they're the bad guys, and the good guys are going to be these Muslim fanatics that we're going to rally around. And of course, Reagan has to take it up to ratchet it up and call them, have a freedom fighter day, and back them all the way. And they get recruited from all over the world, and that's how Bin Laden ends up in Afghanistan. And so, you know, history, these actions have unintended consequences. You know, stuff that's going on right now in Iraq, you know, in Lebanon, is going to haunt us 30, 40, 50 years from now. You know, just like, why do we have problems with Iran? Because, you know, back in the Eisenhower administration, they make this idiotic decision to overthrow a guy named Mohammad Mossadegh,
right.
who was the last secular guy you ever had in Iran. So now we're haunted by that, you know.
And we plugged in the Shah. We're talking with Robert Scheer. The book is called Playing President, based on his face-to-face interviews with almost every sitting president since Nixon, except for George W. Bush. Next, let's talk about Ron.
I believe that if you can't say something nice about a person, you shouldn't say anything at all.
Well, we can't. I'm sorry. Sorry, Ronnie, we're not going to be able to live up to that. So what were your impressions of Reagan when you met him?
Oh, I can live up to that. You know, I mean, I'm well-versed on Reagan's not only failures, but I consider his not dealing with the AIDS crisis criminal.
you know, I'm very harsh on that. But I have plenty of nice things to say about Reagan. I got along with him quite well. I thought he was a much more complex, interesting person than the media ever appreciated. I even have a blurb on the back of my book from Nancy Reagan.
I saw that, yeah.
You know, and the reason is I wrote a piece about him, saying, you know, giving him some credit while he was still alive, because I think Reagan did do a very important thing in ending the Cold War, not in the way the Hawks describe. You know, he built up this military, and that was garbage. And the Soviets never bought into the Star Wars thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
They never did. And Gorbachev, when he arrived at Reykjavik, Iceland, you know, to meet with Reagan, he was prepared. He had already dealt with his own military people, say, okay, go have this Star Wars thing. It's a big boondoggle. You'll end up spending, what have we spent, at least $110 billion on it to fly. You know, and he just met with Reagan and said, look, you can't use these weapons. They don't work. They just destroy civilization. They're not usable, and they're incredibly dangerous. And Reagan looked this man in the eye and said, you're right. And he comes out of the room, and all these neocons who are out there, they're now called neocons. By the way, Cheney and Rumsfeld, you know, started with Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Their grievance with so-called liberals goes back to Nixon.
Right.
You know, so Reagan came out and he said, you know, this guy Gorbachev's got his head screwed on right, and, you know, and we got to make peace about this stuff and get rid of these weapons. Remember, Reagan endorsed the idea of getting rid of all of them. All of them.
That's right.
You know, and so I think, you know, Reagan does deserve a lot of credit. But it's interesting, in the Nixon interview I did, Nixon told me that was 84. He said, Ronald Reagan is not, and these are the words he used, he's not a right-wing kook.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really interesting. First of all, for Nixon to use those words, he won't have a Republican using such words now because they are right-wing kooks. But Nixon understood that the menace from the right wing of his party had actually been there. He understood, you know, how dangerous that could be. And he said, no, Reagan is not that way. And Nancy Reagan understood that. Nancy Reagan was the one who got rid of Pat Buchanan. She's the one who got rid of Don Regan. She was the one who told Ronnie it was a good thing to reach out to the Russians and to the Chinese. And so
that was after she talked to her astrologist.
Yeah, well, I'm a big Nancy Reagan defender because the attacks on Nancy Reagan really came from the right wing, from the neocons. And Nancy, even though her father had been very conservative, she understood there were right wing kooks, and she didn't want Ronnie destroyed by them. And all of the decisions that her detractors attribute to astrologers were good decisions. And I wrote a piece at the time about that. I said, my goodness, you know, supposedly an astrologer told her it's good for Ronnie to get along with the Chinese and it's good to get rid of Pat Buchanan. Well, maybe more presidents should consult astrologers.
Joan Quigley was her name, astrologer in San Francisco.
Yeah, a very sensible woman, evidently. And, you know, so
I'm not sold on that, Bob.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, I don't want to whitewash anybody, you know, whether it's Clinton or Carter, that's not my job here, but I don't want to miss a point here that I am very alarmed by the current president. And when I say these other guys didn't prepare me, for what they all had in common is that they were there. There was a person there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I observed George W. Bush during his father's campaign. I had contact with him, and I saw him in operation. The fact is he turned his back on his father. He turned his back on the people around his father who knew something, Baker and Brent Scovell and those people.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is, as I say in the book, the first perfectly electronically transmitted president. There is no there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've gone through a process of demeaning the presidency, and suddenly you end up with a guy who just really is not aware that he's president. You know, and that was not true of these other people. They had lived real lives. I mean, Reagan was born in the Depression. His father was, you know, thrown out of work. He worked for the New Deal. Reagan, you know, he'd come up the hard way. He, you know, whatever he was, he'd done on his own, and you know, he'd been a radio announcer like you.
Yeah.
You know, and you know how hard that can be.
Yes, I do. All right, Bob, we got to take a break. We'll continue in just a moment. But first, this from Nancy.
Not old age. He's got a mind like a computer, like a steel trap. He can remember facts and figures that I have long since forgotten. And everybody else has, too.
That's Nancy Reagan defending Ronnie pre-Alzheimer's. It's about 1989. We'll continue in just a moment. We'll grab some calls, too, if you'd like to talk with Robert Scheer about the presidents he's known. Grab a line now. 1-888-5-PETER-B. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the best of Peter B. Collins, pre-recorded. happy holidays from all of us at the Peter B. Collins Show.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Deborah Lindsay with Tomorrow Matters on KRXA 540 AM, wishing you a safe holiday season and encouraging you to make earth-friendly choices for your celebrations. Join me each Sunday at 2 to match global problems of today with local solutions for a better tomorrow. Remember, the greatest gift we can give is a healthy planet. Tomorrow Matters, right here on KRXA 540 AM, every Sunday at 2.
Good afternoon. Here is your traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First in Castroville, it's a Castroville Boulevard. There's an accident reported. Two vehicles are in the center divide. No injuries. Also, Saratoga Highway 9, a mile and a half east of Redwood Gulch Road. A vehicle is down on the embankment. CHP and the fire department are on the scene. We do have some road work to report in Salinas. Sandberg Road between Abbott Street and Highway 101. Eastbound lanes are closed for a paving project. Lanes are open for westbound traffic only. Southbound 101 is slowing down now between Monterey and Carmel. And eastbound Highway 25 is slows out of Gilroy into Hollister. This traffic report is brought to you by Cost Plus World Market. You can ring in the new year with big savings on sparkling wine at Cost Plus. A trio of Napa Valley favorites is just $12.99 each. Please drink responsibly. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
Come on, lighten up out there.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're talking with the journalist once described by Hillary Rodham Clinton as her favorite columnist. Robert Scheer is our guest. You've heard him on public radio's Left, Right, and Center. He's a columnist syndicated by the San Francisco Chronicle. And we're talking about his recently released book in paperback, Playing President, My Close Encounters with Nixon, Carter, Bush 1, Reagan, and Clinton, and How They Did Not Prepare Me for George W. Bush. Let's talk about Bush 1 now, Bob Scheer. George H.W. Bush, far different from his son in many ways, most of which are kind of endearing now.
Well, he was a doer to begin with. I mean, he was somebody who, you know, yes, he was born to privilege, but he thought you have to do your homework. You know, you have to read. I mean, you have to study. You've got to pass the exams on your own. And when he got on, he wasn't a cheerleader for the sports teams. He was on the baseball team. You know, he went into the military, and he actually, you know, served in combat and, you know, didn't try to avoid it, and still jumping out of airplanes and things. You know, so, you know, whatever criticism I have of Bush 1, he certainly was a man of real achievement and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Very smart fellow, and certainly had, as I say, absorbed an awful lot of information. By the way, I agree with what Nancy Reagan said before in that little excerpt. I think I spent a lot of time interviewing Ronnie Reagan. I interviewed him before he was governor and after, and before he was president and all that, and there was no question Reagan had a great deal of knowledge and experience, so
mm-hmm.
throw that in as a little footnote.
All right, but tell that to Samuel Pierce, the director of HUD, who was greeted in a cabinet meeting as, "Hello, Mr. Mayor."
Yeah, well, I know, you know, I don't think he was racist or anything, but I do think
to lunch. That was how he survived as long as he did. He would.
That's interesting.
That's what those naps were. That's why, you know, I'm not going to. It was sort of Einstein said that. I'm not saying he was an Einstein, but remember, Einstein said, I'm not going to remember anything that I can write down. Or,
you
know.
Right. Yeah.
Reagan had a strategy for how you get through the day, you know, how you get through the months and years, and how you preserve your energy. And I don't know. It's not the thing. I told you what I attack Reagan for. I thought AIDS, he's responsible for the death of millions of people, you know, by not willing to deal with the AIDS crisis when it developed and not supplying the money to do the research and not willing to do the condom distribution and education. So I'm not going light on Reagan there. But,
And Bob, if I wanted to pick one thing that I'm critical of Senior Bush for, it was the way he personalized his disputes. Manuel Noriega became, you know, a Willie Horton character, the most evil guy on the planet. And then we locked him up, and then he turned to Saddam. He called him Saddam Hussein, a way of insulting him. And I really felt that when he attempted to personalize those disputes, he undermined his own position and that of the United States.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing about Bush 1 is that he had a pretty reasonable take on what was going on in the world, and it's a take that has been betrayed by Bush 2. He understood that we were not going to be the big power running everything, that there were other economies that were coming along fast, that that imperialism doesn't pay. It pays for some companies like Halliburton, but it doesn't pay for the American taxpayers, you know, and you got to do what the Chinese are doing, you know, buying up all these oil futures instead of trying to patrol the oil pipelines. And so in that sense, Bush 1 seems absolutely enlightened. But yes, he was very thin-skinned. He made things personal. I know that because he tried to get me fired from the L.A. Times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, told Otis Chandler I was the worst thing going, and, you know, we had a personal confrontation right in front of my boss, Otis Chandler, the publisher, and Otis took me aside and said in the book, I said, you know, Bob, that you captured the Bush that I've known from childhood, and so just keep doing your work.
Ah, nice.
Unfortunately, the current publisher didn't feel that way and fired me. But
well, he's a Tribune guy.
Yeah.
We're tight for time, and I got a couple of callers for you. Let's tell your story about Bill Clinton. You wrote a piece that compared him to Eisenhower, and he wrote you a lengthy personal note trying to argue against that, and then you had an encounter at a state dinner.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I have to admit, I like Clinton. He's a very charming guy, and very smart, probably the smartest politician I've ever interviewed, and certainly knows a great deal. But what I object to in Clinton was all that triangulation, and you're seeing that with Hillary now, and that's one reason I bring up Jimmy Carter's warlike ways. I mean, you know, Democrats can do a lot of mischief, and you know, but basically I was summarizing Clinton's years, and I said he will be remembered as a great president, but right of center. You know, he basically gave to the big corporations what they wanted, the Telecommunications Act, Financial Service Modernization Act, and all that kind of stuff.
Welfare reform.
Welfare. And, you know, but he didn't get us into too much in the way of foreign adventures, and he basically defeated the right wing, at least temporarily, and brought us back to kind of a center, and that's what I said would be his great achievement, that he was a man of the center, and wasn't afraid of them. He could take them on. Unfortunately, you got too many other Democrats who are afraid of the right wing and have to, you know, pander to them.
Right.
Clinton took them on, you know, and they took him on, and he took them on, and so I have a lot of respect for him, and I wrote that piece, and much to my amazement, I got a handwritten letter back from him. He must have sat down at some desk and just scrawled out every single program that he thought was progressive that he'd done in his administration, and he only ended when he came to the end of the page, you know? And then I had no idea he expected a response. So when I went to the state dinner, you know, going through the receiving line, that's where Hillary said, you know, yeah, you're my favorite columnist and all that. However, you know, as a columnist, as a radio person like yourself, you know, you can't let that get to you.
Right.
You know, Hillary's not playing a good role now, and I have to criticize her. But when I was going through the line, they announced your name, and, you know, and then Bill Clinton said, oh, you never answered my letter. The last thing I thought, well, it's true, it was handwritten, but I never assumed that, you know, that he would have. And he said, well, I've sent you another one, you know, and sure enough, he sent me another one, and I talked to him about it just a few months ago because he was in L.A., And, you know, personally, I think the guy is great. Personally, I think Hillary Clinton is great. I think she's a very smart and very appealing person, and she could play a great role. But she's no Eleanor Roosevelt. She's not willing to take her lumps, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's sad.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up on your note about how all of these presidents who you met, talked to, interacted with, wrote about, never prepared you for George W. Bush.
Yeah, well, I think that's the alarming thing about where we are now. I mean, we're in this crazy situation where you got these people saying we're in World War III, Islamo-fascism, and, you know, I wonder, you know, the Islamo-fascists, on the one hand, you got the, what, Judeo-Christian imperialists on the other. Where does that leave the rest of us, you know? It's scary. And this guy, I just feel, doesn't know what he's into. I mean, I don't think he really ever expected to be president, and certainly his father never expected to be president. He preferred the other brother. I think the family was shocked. I mean, one reason I didn't interview George W. back in those days is no one ever told me he was going to be president, you know.
Bob, we're out of time. I want to thank you. This has been fascinating. Right. I really enjoyed it. The book is Playing President. Robert Scheer has been our guest this hour. Visit truthdig.com, and you can get more information, even buy the book right there. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up next, it's the Free Speech Zone. We'll be taking your calls. Any subject, anything.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated for 36 years, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer. Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Christmaka, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. Is the clock ticking toward an execution? Iraqi officials claim Saddam Hussein could be hanged within just a couple of hours. CBS News correspondent David Martin begins our coverage.
U.S. officials say the Iraqi government really wants to execute him as quickly as possible. And an Iraqi spokesman said all the legal paperwork has been completed, including a red card, which is the actual execution order. But apparently there was a religious issue that was complicating the timing. A Muslim holy period begins this weekend, and there was some question whether Iraqi law permitted the execution of a Muslim on a holy day.
This is Charles Wolfson at the State Department. Asked about a report from Baghdad that Saddam Hussein would be executed by 10 p.m. Washington time, a senior State Department official said that is one possibility, but he added there are still other options. State Department officials say a cable has been sent to all U.S. diplomatic posts abroad asking they review their security in light of the ongoing situation in Iraq.
Witnesses to the execution have been gathering in the Green Zone in Baghdad. The U.S. military has announced the deaths of three more Marines in Anbar province, bringing the monthly death toll to 106 and making December the deadliest month this year. In Palm Desert, California, 6 days of mourning for former President Gerald Ford began today.
Somber and precise, military pallbearers carried the body of Gerald Ford into the family church, while his widow Betty, their children and grandchildren watched in silence. It was the first time the family has been seen in public since Mr. Ford's death. While family and friends bade farewell at the private service, neighbors did so in their own way.
He's been a great, great inspiration to all of us here in the desert as well, our country, and we loved him very, very much.
Correspondent Bill Whitaker. Another winter storm has canceled flights in Denver and stranded motorists on the roadways there. The National Guardsmen called out to help rescue them. Dolly White is with the Office of Emergency Management.
Motorists are calling from their cell phones. So we've got three missions going, one in Baca County. It's a tour bus rescue. and then two for just multiple motorists that got stranded on a highway.
In Texas, tornadoes have killed one person and injured many more. Sherrold Wood is with the Limestone Medical Center in Central Texas.
We received quickly over 12 victims, and we saw injuries running from small lacerations to some serious injuries.
The President and First Lady were keeping an eye on the storms.
I'm Mark Noller in Crawford, Texas. It was an afternoon of severe weather in Central Texas that included tornado warnings for the area that included the President's ranch. As a precaution, the Secret Service moved Mr. and Mrs. Bush and their dogs to a tornado shelter on the ranch property.
This is CBS News.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Sweet! I've been waiting for lunch all day!
Me too! Natalie, I'll trade my apple for your potato chips.
I don't know, Matthew, my potato chips or your cookie?
Let's see. Billy, what's that?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
An apple and my gummy bears for the Ovaltine?
No way!
Potato chips and grape juice for the rich chocolate Ovaltine?
No way!
Two cookies, bubblegum, and my Hershey's chocolate milk?
Double no way!
Aww! More Ovaltine, please!
A Western automotive giant has merged with a Chinese company to get a foot in the door of one of the world's fastest-growing economies. Beth Fisher of WWJ reports.
The automaker's Chrysler Group has made a deal with China's Chery Automobile to build small cars. Chairman of the Center for Automotive Research, David Cole, thinks it's a good move since Chrysler doesn't have a small car.
This has been a growing market, particularly in some of the emerging economies. We're looking at India, of course, China, and other emerging economies. This is a core product in those markets.
If approved by Chrysler's supervisory board, the cars would be built in China. Cole saying it's too expensive to build them in the U.S. Beth Fisher, CBS News, Detroit.
Crowds gathered in North Augusta, South Carolina today to pay tribute to singer James Brown, who died on Christmas Day. His gold casket on display at New York's Apollo Theater traveled to a Baptist church there. A public funeral will be held tomorrow at the James Brown Arena in Augusta, Georgia. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
Hello, I'm George. Every year about this time, my wife gets concerned about my rowdy and crazy behavior. I can't help it. Happy Honda Days gets me all giggly and rambunctious. Hurry to your Honda dealer today and get an awesome deal on the 8-passenger Pilot, the ultra-functional Element, or the innovative Ridgeline. Yeah, baby. Happy Honda Days. It's going off, dude. Seriously.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for watching my kids.
Good timing. I'm making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ooh, my kids love chocolate milk.
So do mine. But I didn't make it for them. This Ovaltine's for us.
Really?
Hey, adults love the taste, too. Plus, I drink rich chocolate Ovaltine every day because it's high in calcium and antioxidants like vitamins A, C, and E. Ovaltine even has iron I need, which I can't get from Nesquik powder or milk alone.
Mmm, Ovaltine is good.
And it's loaded with vitamins and minerals. Nesquik powder doesn't come close.
More Ovaltine, please.
As we launch into another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, I'm glad you're listening. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Coming up next hour, we visit with John Laird. He chairs California's Assembly Budget Committee. We'll talk about the special session on prisons and some other issues, too. Then we'll spend the rest of next hour with Bob Petraeus, candidate for governor in Ohio. And we're going to talk about a recent article that claimed that Kerry wouldn't have won the election in Ohio in 2004, which I don't agree with. That's all ahead, but this hour, we're going to meet Steve Elson. He served over 20 years as a Navy SEAL. Then he joined the Federal Aviation Administration's Red Team. Their job was to break through airport security, so he knows where the vulnerabilities are. And he is a colleague of Bogdan Zakovic, who has been on our program before. Together, they whistle blew, if that is the proper past tense. They blew the whistle on the shocking vulnerabilities of our air security system as far back as 1999. Steve Elson, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I expect to learn quite a bit over the course of the next hour. I wanted to start by reading a passage that was written by your colleague Bogdan Zukovic, and that was published earlier this year in a book called Patriots Act, Voices of Dissent and the Risk of Speaking Out. This is almost prophetic. The real problem, as I see it, is that the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, is built on the same weak foundation as the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. It will always be at least one step behind the terrorists. Remember the shoe bomber? Right after that incident, the TSA made everyone take off their shoes at the screening checkpoints. Then we had the female Chechen terrorists, who apparently hid explosives in their underwear. And so TSA screeners started groping female passengers until a big public outcry brought that silliness to a stop. Next time, the terrorists might put explosives in toothpaste tubes, and you can count on TSA screeners squishing out all the toothpaste from passengers' bags. If the terrorists had a sense of humor, they'd put some kind of lethal chemical agent on toilet paper and make sure the government finds it. Then our government will outlaw toilet paper in all public restrooms. And there is clearly a tongue-in-cheek element to what he's saying, but we were squeezing toothpaste tubes just yesterday, weren't we?
Yes, sir, we were.
And from your point of view, does this make us safer?
There is nothing in the TSA that makes us safer now. You call the TSA the Transportation Security Administration. I refer to it as the Terrorist Support Agency or Administration because it is the single best source for a terrorist to go to, their website, and listen to them on TV to find out how to defeat aviation security. And if they're only one step behind, we ought to be overjoyed.
Well, and I'm an amateur at all this, but I can sit here right in the comfort of my radio studio and imagine a lot of different ways to get past the current security measures that are being taken.
Well, you make an excellent point. I would say if somebody would get me the authority, I'll guarantee you that we could go out today in condition red and get explosives, liquid, granular, or plastic, right onto a plane with absolutely no problem.
Well, you say that with such conviction. I have no reason to challenge that. And having gotten some things through, just inadvertently, whether it's the, banned nail clippers or they did get my mustache trimmer, and I'm still a little bit pissed about that. there are things that have slipped through. And I've even had things in a suitcase where they left the little love note behind, that says this bag was inspected, and here's a note from the TSA, and they miss things that I think they probably could have construed as somehow risky or in violation.
I don't doubt it at all. There's no surprise. The only surprise would be if they actually did well. I mean, the failure rates are just legend.
Yeah. Now, Steve, as this news report started to surface on Wednesday evening, what was your first reaction when you heard that the British had intercepted and broken up this plan to use chemical bombs or little, homebrew chemical-based devices to blow up as many as 10 different airliners?
Well, I thought, like most people that were following what was going on, this is a replay of the Bojinka incident, which I was heavily involved in and have a lot of knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got a picture of the guy's butt that was blown up on the test flight,
uh-huh.
And his testicle dribbling down the wall on the plane.
Mm.
So, I'll pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah. Is there any skepticism that surfaces in your mind that this is being hyped or overblown?
To a degree, the thing that disturbs me is that the politicians, both parties, Democratic, Republican, are playing this up and making it a much bigger deal than it is. And I think the public is really missing, as TSA and the government has, they're missing the key points on this. I kind of look at it in two ways. If we're going to look at, first of all, I looked at it as intelligence. The 9/11 Commission was really big on intelligence failures. And there were intelligence failures, but the simple fact is the FAA could have prevented 9/11 with nothing more than a piece of rope out of a garbage can, a few simple procedures. And the other simple fact is that a terrorist group is nothing more than a special operations outfit, like the Green Berets, like the British SAS, and they use the same methodologies. And what they did here was they violated some of the most basic tenets of operational security, OPSEC, in their operation planning. So many people knew what was going on. They got overly ambitious. The second point goes back to the TSA. And the fact is the TSA would never have found these items, and they would have been successful in their attempt to blow up the planes. And the big thing we have to remember is everybody gets real excited, and you look at operations like this at both vulnerability and threat. If you look strictly at vulnerability, we already know there's a threat. We don't care how big it is. We don't care which group did it. We don't care which explosive they use. If we look simply at the whole range of vulnerabilities and close off those vulnerabilities, in other words, this is a simple approach, we have a paradigm or a model for doing that, then whoever wants to do it or whatever they want to use probably will have a big obstacle in their way.
Mm-hmm. Steve, I want to turn to something you said a moment ago, which is the way that politicians have been playing this issue, and I agree with what you said. In particular, the Republicans started making comments before this plot breakup was revealed on Wednesday in reference to the Lieberman-Lamont election in the primary in Connecticut. And Tony Snow, the president, the vice president, and others made remarks that suggested that this guy Lamont is somehow, you know, allied with Al-Qaeda. And there were a lot of comments that now in retrospect, you know, just 48 hours passing, you can see were very pointed. And it was using the insider information to try to set up a kind of political frame that the Republicans think strengthened them and hurt Democrats. And you're correct that there has been a reaction from Democrats regarding the politics. And so it's distracting to the American people. And it also undermines our confidence. It's like the boy who cried wolf, because we have seen that this administration has used either alerts or the announcement of breakups of different plots or cells for political purposes. And it leaves somebody like me kind of jaded and cynical, saying, okay, what's this really about? And I'm not disputing that there was a plot and that the British broke it up. But where I get cautious or skeptical is in how our political leaders have played it.
Well, Bush is a liar. I mean, it's all there to it, but he's no different from Bill Clinton before. In this administration, they vilify anybody that disagrees with them. And they're so desperate to say they're stopping something. Remember a couple weeks ago, they had the five Chicago Tower bombers at the FBI?
Yeah, the Miami group.
Yeah, and these turned out to be five guys who were in black guys, I guess they were black Muslims, wearing camouflage gear and jumping over chairs in a parking lot. Huge threat. I don't even think they could spell Sears Towers, but
well,
they brought this up as a great, you know, intelligence success in preventing another attack.
I don't think they're a Muslim, Steve, but their FBI informant led them in a group loyalty oath to Osama bin Laden.
Well, people, you know, get led oaths to Bush, and that's what he expects. You know, the difference between, what's the difference between the government, and I include Democrats in this, and, you know, bin Laden? They each take oaths. They each have an agenda. The difference is bin Laden took his oath, however crazy it was, you know, says what he's going to do and does it. The other people in Congress have all taken an oath to protect and defend us and then sell us out. And the TSA, I can give you history and example, and if you'd like, I can run through. You're in the Bay Area?
That's right.
I can run through what happened in San Francisco from 1992 to today, and there's nothing nothing but failures. So Bush says he's protecting us. How's he protecting us when the TSA keeps failing everything they do at virtually a 100% level?
That's a very powerful question. We're talking with Steve Elson. He's with us this entire hour. Steve, we're going to take a quick break and then return and talk more. He's a former member of the FAA's Red Team, and as you can tell, he's outspoken, and he's willing to tell us what he knows about the problems in our air security system. If you have a question or comment, join us. The number's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Or drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. You're listening to the best of Peter B. Collins, pre-recorded. Happy holidays from all of us at the Peter... The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Here's your traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First, we have a stalled vehicle south of Venlamon Hermosa Avenue at Glen Arbor Road. It's a stalled motorhome, and that is partially blocking the roadway. Road construction still in Santa Cruz, northbound 1. The Inline Avenue off-ramp closed for long-term roadwork scheduled to continue through December of 07. We have some slowdowns now. Southbound 101 leaving Silicon Valley heavy from Highway 85 to Coyote, Gulf Creek Drive. It also continues heavy through Gilmore, Prunedale, and into Salinas. Also slowdowns northbound 101 and southbound 101 heavy in and out of Salinas. Northbound 101 also slows at the San Miguel Canyon turnoff. So it's your Friday going home time, and this traffic is brought to you by Mobil 1 Extended Performance Motor Oil. You can get your engine ready for winter with 15,000 miles of guaranteed protection. Only from Mobil Oil 1 Extended Motor Oil. That's your traffic. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let's get ready and go on a trip.
I used to fly with my clothes on till the airline clothing banned. We went from scanning to banning. One airline had tanning, and this was the ad they ran. Fly safe, fly naked, no weapons to find. You're safer with nothing on. Naked Airlines. No carry-ons, no clothing, no laptops. Well, laptops. And I'm feeling shy. Instead of metal detection, no clothing, directions from the nude flight attendant, a guy. Damn. Fly safe.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, where clothing is optional. Steve Elson is our guest this hour, a former member of the Federal Aviation Administration's Red Team. Their job was to penetrate airport security, and he did it on a regular basis, and he's filling us in on the vulnerabilities that we face. Steve, so many things I want to talk with you about. First up, tell me about this. The cargo that goes on passenger planes and cargo that flies on what are exclusively cargo planes, that is still not inspected on a full basis. Is that the case?
Oh, absolutely. It's almost not inspected at all. As a matter of fact, I got an email from somebody involved in that, and I have several sources in the TSA. And about, they had some fairly good people. Half of them just quit. They said they couldn't stand the TSA. They either went to other government agencies or to private enterprise. And it's just, it's another one. If you look at aviation, it's really a subsystem. But if you look at aviation security as a system, the TSA focuses primarily on checkpoints because that's what passengers see and experience. The ramps, access control, background checks, cargo security, mail, wide open.
Mm-hmm.
All of it wide open.
Yeah. Steve, when I was still in high school, my dad, who was a World War II history buff, took me to France, and he wanted to show me the Maginot Line, and he did. We spent about a day walking through these gun batteries that had been built after World War II and before, after World War I and before World War II. And the French felt that they had built an impregnable defense system. And the Luftwaffe, Hitler's Air Force, flew over, and one of the miscalculations the French made was that the gun turrets did not spin 360 degrees.
I remember.
They were simply pointed at the enemy, and I guess they had, maybe a 270-degree arc. And so Hitler flew well over and then behind this line of defense and handily bombed it. And that was a tremendous education and lesson for me. When you look at airport security and the problems that we've had, the penetrations that have occurred causing a loss of life, have we essentially built a Maginot Line? In other words, we've protected against the last attack, but we haven't imagined other attacks that we need to defend against in the future.
Well, if we had a Maginot Line, I would be absolutely impressed. What I see is not a Maginot Line, but a big Swiss cheese, just absolutely full of holes. And, in the TSA, there isn't anybody in Congress or any place that speaks well of the TSA now, and everybody knows what's going on, that you can get anything through pretty much you want. You can get out in the ramps. Why go through all the hassle of going through a checkpoint, getting inspected, having your bags x-rayed, having your bags through the big CTX machines, being run through a no-file list, when you can literally walk out on the ramps, Pearl, go to airports, Pearl, go to planes, Pearl, and put bombs, Pearl, on them without ever being detected or bothered. It's that easy to do.
Well, as you're describing this, I'm thinking of some interviews I saw yesterday with the head of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, and he really does seem to be just a little better than Michael Brown. He's a little smoother, in terms of the media exchanges, but he kept saying, I don't want to give the terrorists any ideas, And, you know, on the one hand, you thought, oh, well, he's being really smart. But he's telegraphing that there are vulnerabilities that he's not going to give details on. And wouldn't it be better if he were honest with the American people and said, you know, we've identified 41 different ways that enemies could penetrate our airports, and we're not going to tell you what all 41 of those are, but I want you to know we're working on every one of them.
Well, that would indeed be a lot smarter. And the simple fact is they do know a lot of these problems, but, you know, he's going to play those games. And if you really look at what's gone on, I look at this because I've gone out with the media all over the country. I did several things in 2003 with Dan Noyes there at ABC7,
mm-hmm.
proving how bad security was. And first thing my basic premise is do no harm, like the Hippocratic Oath. And number two, do nothing illegal. And people say, well, you're giving stuff away to the terrorists. No, the terrorists know that. If you look, there were articles after we invaded Afghanistan after 9/11. And in an Al-Qaeda cave, there was a GAO, General Accounting Office, document about the General Accounting Office breaking into federal buildings, past security, and airports, and it was translated into Arabic. So these people know this. What I want to do is the American people to hear this, get their heads out of their rear ends, and call their congressmen and call Bush and say, what the hell's going on? You're putting us at needless risk.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's just another politician. He's a little twerpy puke. I sent him a letter. I've got the return receipt asking for that Bogdan and I could come talk to him and come talk to the head of the TSA. I mean, Bogdan's one of the best in the country. They're paying him close to $100,000 a year, and they don't listen to anything he says.
We're going to take a break and return. When we do come back, Steve Elson, I want to ask you to explain Bojinka to us. And also, you offered to tell us some of the history of problems at San Francisco International Airport. We'll cover that as we continue as well. Lines are open if you'd like to talk to our guest, Steve Elson, former member of the FAA Red Team. 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free 888-573-8372 on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey. Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2-1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Stop searching. We've got what you're looking for. Sundays, 3 to 5, The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
At Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of them who tried to secularize America, I want the thing in their face that you help this happen.
I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at the high levels of our government. And so,
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking about airport security and the threat suggested by the plot. The British say they broke up. And we're talking with Steve Elson. He served in the Navy SEALs for over 20 years, then jumped over to the Federal Aviation Administration, where he worked on the red team with Bogdan Zukovic, who you've heard on our program and you've heard us talk about before. The red team's job was to penetrate airport security, to expose the flaws and try to improve systems and practices. And Steve, I want to talk about Bojinka, but first let's take a call. We got Cole in Eureka. If you have a question or comment, you can join us at 888-5-PETER-B. Cole, go right ahead. How are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine. Thank you.
Good. I haven't had much experience with flying. I'm 20 years old. But it seems kind of scary. You know, we had the 9/11, and I didn't fly for a while after that.
Uh-huh. Cole, your cell phone is really hard to hear. Can you kind of just hold it still or something?
Yes. Is that better?
A little better, yeah. Okay, so you say you're about 20 and you haven't flown much.
I haven't flown much. I didn't fly for a while after 11th, and then now that it's 17 years earlier, you know, it's not just in the United States, but it's, you know, if I want to fly internationally, it's kind of scary, so I don't know if I'm capable when I attack the plane that I'm on.
Uh-huh.
So what kind of things do you think can improve to make it safer for Americans to fly?
Okay, I'll pass your question along, and if you have anything else, hang up and dial us back, because we just don't have a very good connection, Cole, from Eureka this afternoon. I appreciate it. So it's a fairly straightforward question, Steve. He just wants to know, if he flies internationally, what kinds of precautions should he take, and what should he be looking for?
Well, you're always going to look for suspicious people, but basically people have to realize that the odds of any one individual getting blown up are extremely remote. For instance, I would have flown the night of 9/11. I would go to London today and fly even if, you know, if I needed to go, even if they weren't checking anything. The odds thing, all we're really trying to do, we can't stop terrorism. We can only manage risk and reduce risk. So basically, if you're going to, as far as being hassled, you know, pack your bags, you know, very clearly, go dressed where you don't have a lot of metal on you. But as far as looking for anything, I wouldn't even bother worrying about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now let's talk about Bojinka. We've got about 9 minutes till our next break. We don't need to spend all that time on it, but I just want you to know that we're not going to cut in 20 seconds and shorten the story, because it's interesting, and I think it's important background on the types of techniques that terrorists have considered. So tell us about Bojinka.
Okay, well, Bojinka was a plot that was discovered by accident when a safe house, apparently an Al-Qaeda safe house, caught in fire in the Philippines.
Manila, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they found a computer, and it had the word Bojinka or Bojinka on it. And what they discovered was a list of large U.S. carriers flying from the Far East that they planned to put, I believe, 12 of them, put explosives on. And And they had actually done a test shot, and it was on a Philippine carrier, and they put a little like a whiteout bottle under a seat with a liquid explosive. It detonated and splayed the guy's rear end and back all over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
The FAA sent one of our people from the red team over.
Steve, excuse me. The victim, there was one person, a Japanese businessman, who was killed.
That's the guy I'm talking about.
And the plane actually was able to land safely, right?
Yeah, it was a very, very small charge. They were just testing.
Uh-huh. Okay,
just
go
like
ahead.
These people were getting ready to do. And these people do look, and they surveil, and they test, just like any smart person wanting to hit a target. So what our guy did, he went over there, the FBI went over there, and the FBI played FBI, and they were all by the book. This guy went out drinking with a lot of the Filipino cops, and he got way more information than the FBI, and we got ideas of what the device looked like, and we took them to a military facility, and we had mock-ups built, and we went out with a lot of directions to airports. I'd been on the red team over at Bangkok, which was one of the intended airports. On the red team, we shredded the airport, as we always do, except the nice thing is that the people there actually took it to heart, and they really improved security. So when Bojinka hit, they were more ready to deal with it. And I worked a lot in intelligence during that. I can't get into a lot of the details, but one of the interesting ones was that we found Middle Easterners over here going to American flight schools. Now, this is 1995. Because I'm a pilot and had a background in that, I tracked the guy down. I found out the school he went to. I knew how he dressed. I knew about his flight bag, about the stickers on the bags and so forth. But simply because of luck, we found out about Manila. We found about the plot. The airlines came into the FAA, and they were very serious and very somber when they came out of the briefing. We got devices out, warned people, and what we found a lot of information. Apparently, there was, I guess it was an Al-Qaeda person, planning to actually go do the operation. And these, what they were doing is putting explosives on planes with timers that could be set up to a year.
Mm.
And so they're very simple devices, but very clever.
That's just using a digital watch, right?
That's it, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these people went to, I think it was Bangkok, one of the airports. He saw the good security, which was rare. He got frightened. He went back home. Then he was afraid his own people were going to kill himself, and he turned himself into a U.S. agency. So that's where we got a lot of the information on what was going on, what the plot was.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And we lucked out and defeated it, but obviously we didn't learn a damn thing.
And what are the points of resistance here? Are the airlines part of the problem that they, you know, after 9/11, they pled poverty and said, well, we can't afford to pay for all this security. And they had resisted enhanced security prior to 9/11, mainly because of cost issues. And so, you know, one would reasonably assume that the self-interest of the airlines is to protect their planes, protect their employees, and at minimum, even if they don't care about us as passengers, they want to reduce the liability from, you know, wrongful death claims. So isn't it in their obvious self-interest to operate in as secure a manner as possible? And isn't that, so obvious, but the actual behavior is far different from that?
Well, you make an excellent point. Now, if you remember a number of years ago in the FAA days, the FAA mission was to promote the industry. Business people who were putting ahead of FAA thought that meant ensure that they make profits. As a security person, my belief was that we promote the industry by ensuring safe flying, because if the planes get blown up, the airlines were going to suffer, which happened. Now, it's interesting the 9/11 Commission steered everybody towards intelligence failures, which really didn't have a whole hell of a lot to do with 9/11. But look at a couple of the political aspects. If you say there were intelligence failures in the FBI, which didn't have any intelligence or any intelligence analysts who were trained, and the CIA, it works to everybody's benefit because they say, gee, we could have done well if we had more assets and resources. So the government gives them more money, more people. If you go to the FAA, the FAA is a regulatory agency. It regulated a profit-making industry, and Congress, the DOT, and FAA didn't want to hurt the monies. So they bent over and allowed this to happen. FAA, all the people in the government took an oath to protect and defend the country. Nothing about ensuring profits, but in fact, they went with the airlines, they bought into the program because of the donations, and they allowed us to be killed. The FAA is guilty of murder.
Well, that's an important statement. Let's go back to the phones here. Xavier in Santa Cruz. Join us on the Peter B. Collins Show with Steve Elson.
Hi. Are either or both of you familiar with the BBC, it was like three-program series called the Power of Nightmares?
I haven't seen that. Steve, are you familiar with it, a BBC series, Power of Nightmares?
I haven't seen it either, sir.
Well, what it claims is that the neocons and the Islamic fundamentalists are essentially both have their roots in something that happened back in the 40s, and they both have parallel ideologies of disempowering people and having, like, in fact, one time they were actually on the same team in whenever the Soviet Union was trying to go after Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And what it seems like they're trying to do is have an agreement that the other side is the enemy so they can demonize each other and continue to have this power over their own prospective people.
Well, Xavier, I can't take it back to the 40s, but in the 1980s, when the Soviet Union occupied Afghanistan, we took a number of steps using covert operatives, including what became the Mujahideen. And so there is linkage there. Let me turn to Steve. He knows more than I do.
Okay,
I couldn't hear all of his question, but it sounded more like a political thing. And I really deal mostly with operational matters and intelligence, because I don't think, you know, that's all interesting, and it's, you know, talked about, from what I could hear of the gentleman's comment, you know, about the political and alliances.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that has anything to do with aviation security. That all may be well and true, but that has nothing to do with why TSA is a failure.
Mm-hmm. All right, Xavier, thanks for the question. And on that note, have you seen the newest issue of Vanity Fair, which includes the transcripts of the NORAD tapes from 9/11?
No, sir. I was at the 9/11 hearings, but I haven't seen that.
Okay. Well, if I can recommend it to you, it's fascinating. Just to they actually have, if you read it online, there are links to the audio files that have been pulled out of the evidence tapes from that day. And what really comes clear is that there was a great deal of confusion over whether the attacks being reported, you know, starting with the hijacked jets out of Logan, were real world or war games.
Right.
And so NORAD had a great deal of confusion because there were war games going on 9/11 that involved hijacked aircraft. So I would ask you to take a look at that because it's interesting. I'm not reducing it to an indictment, but my concern is that we haven't done much to address the problems that NORAD encountered on 9/11 and that nobody has been held accountable for the failures that day. If I compare it to the Super Bowl, we got skunked, you know, 65-0 on 9/11. And ordinarily, the team that loses the Super Bowl gets a new coach and a new quarterback and a new defensive coordinator.
Well, your point's excellent. And if we have one main mantra, it's no accountability, no remedies. And the simple fact is that virtually everybody involved in 9/11, TSA, FBI, they all got promoted or rewarded. And I've documented a lot of this. I wrote a white paper. I sent it to Matt there.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants a copy, I'll be glad to send it to them. I've sent it, gave it to five people on the 9/11 Commission. It's gone to a number of places and different aviation security people around the world. I dared anybody or challenged or begged people to come up and challenge it. And it goes back with Bogdan. Since 1998, we've made a lot of predictions and a lot of warnings. And without any hubris, I will say we've never, ever, to the best of my knowledge, been wrong. We have 100% accuracy.
Steve, we're going to take a break and continue. Steve Elson with us, former member of the FAA Red Team. We've got another segment, so if you have a question, bring it on now. 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. 47 minutes past the hour. I'm Peter B. Collins. You're listening to the best of Peter B. Collins, pre-recorded. Happy holidays from all of us at the Peter B. Collins.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Good afternoon. Here is your traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First in Ben Lomond, east and Anse, south of Quail Hollow Road. One car is in the roadway, another ditch with an accident there. San Juan Bautista, Highway 156, west of Rocks Road. This is a 40-foot-long trailer. It has broken axles, and it is partially in the roadway. CHP units are on the scene. Capitola, 41st Avenue at Portola Drive. An accident, two vehicles, CHP on the scene. No injuries at this time. And also, we do have some slowdowns to report. Eastbound Highway 129 is now slow between Watsonville and Armas. And eastbound and westbound 156 is slow between Castroville and San Juan Bautista. And it's never been a better time to buy that Mercedes on your wish list through January 2nd. Get special offers through Mercedes on select C, E, and M-Class models. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show as we continue with Steve Elson. He worked for the Federal Aviation Administration's Red Team over 20 years as a Navy SEAL before that. And he's fighting to get the word out about our true vulnerabilities in terms of airline security. And you can tell he's a guy who doesn't mince any words. I really appreciate that, Steve. You talked with us earlier this hour and mentioned that you could tell us about some of the vulnerabilities at the one of the West Coast's most important hubs, the San Francisco International Airport. Talk a little bit about what's going on there. And I understand that we have a new head of TSA there whose background was with the California Highway Patrol.
Well, exactly. He's not new. He's been there several years. I'll get into him in a minute.
All right.
What I'm going to do is take you through a quick chronology of San Francisco Airport. In early 92 and early 93, the Department of Transportation went out and tested a number of airports. San Francisco was one of them. On 2 April 93, FA Director of Security Operations, Lynn Osmus, sent a draft report to DOT to address the findings. And she talked about all the problems. The failure rates were about 75%. And I have this documented. And most things I have documented. They're indisputable, so that's not even an issue.
Okay.
In the mid-90s, there were other continuing evaluations of the same type of failures. I do not have documentation on that. On 20 October 98, there was a memo from San Francisco Airport, which I will be faxing you shortly, of a vulnerability assessment. This one was unique in that it had an extremely large sample. You want a statistically significant sample, of course, when you do any assessments. This had 450 attempts to breach security. This was an outside group hired by the FAA. It was videotaped by the Navy for the FAA. Out of the 450 attempts to breach security, the guys breaching got through 446 times. That's a 99.11% failure rate.
Wow.
Including going through the checkpoint with pistols behind their belt buckles and MAC-10 submachine guns on their back.
Wow.
The FAA was so impressed. This was originally done for the federal security managers, senior FAA people at airports to teach. The FAA was so impressed with this, they buried it and hid it. They did nothing. A year later, they went out with these SEA, special emphasis assessments, all over the country, and these were supposed to be more realistic tests. We were threatened with our jobs if we revealed them. We found out, and I have the documents, that the head of operations in the FAA told the airlines about this. They still failed them. In February of 03, Dan Noyes of ABC7 there in San Francisco flew to New Orleans where I was. We were preparing to move to D.C. We talked for 3 hours or so. He went back. He went to San Francisco Airport and conducted assessments using these lead film bags.
Mm-hmm. I recall that. Yeah.
Yeah, they block x-rays, they block guns, they block liquid. Whatever's in the path of, between the x-ray gun and the reception plate is blocked. 100% failure rate. I took a copy of that tape and went to Nancy Pelosi's office.
Mm-hmm.
April Fool's Day. I talked to Ms. Downey at the desk for 4 minutes, and she took the tape and gave it to Laura Levinson, her staffer, who's still there. I checked today. I went back on 9 April, and I talked to Ms. Levinson, and I gave her that report of the 99.11% failure rate.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to talk to me that day. I waited till late in the evening. She came out of her office. One constituent there, I told the guy, sit down and listen to me. I asked her, what the heck's going on here? You know, she's supposed to be the leader. Well, she's too busy now as a leader to deal with these issues. I said, you mean too busy to deal with another 9/11 event? That was the end of that. On 4 May 03, Dan Noyes went back to San Francisco and did the same exact assessment. 100% failure rate again. In that, Mr. Gomez, the federal security director, what a real charming guy, getting down and talking to a dog. I mean, the guy's an idiot. I went back to Pelosi's office on the 21st of May at 12:23, and they still didn't want to talk to me. Then I went to Jane Harmon's office, and I talked to David Granis. This was on 20 May at 9:11 in the morning. I gave a copy to him. I went back to Ms. Pelosi's office on the 23rd of July at 12:05 and talked with Jim Giottina. Ms. Levinson wouldn't even talk to me. So these people just plain don't give a damn. You know, when somebody tells me she's too busy, I wrote her a nice paper about leadership and that leaders don't have to do. They merely assess, task, and follow up.
Mm-hmm.
On October 5th to October 5th of this year to January 6th of this year, the GAO, the General Accounting Office, hit 21 airports throughout the country doing multiple bomb tests, and they keep it classified, and the airports are classified, but inside sources tell me San Francisco's one of those. On these tests, they tried to get caught. TSA failed, you guessed it, once again, 100% of the time. So what we have at San Francisco from 1993 to 2006 was a 75% failure, followed by a very consistent 100% failure rate. That's billions of dollars spent so that we can get killed easily.
Wow, Steve. And they tell us that we should feel safer.
They they're lying. Now, one of the problems with TSA, and invite your listeners to go to the TSA website and look at the bios of the people in the TSA. Most of them are lawyers or public affairs people. Up in New Jersey, where one of the planes was stolen on 9/11, the federal security manager there, who had been the FAA and was responsible for the airport, got hired by the TSA. He failed time after time after time. Ron Marsico of the Star-Ledger documented it. He got a $20,000 bonus. They just canned him and replaced him with Mark Hatfield, Senator Hatfield's son.
Oh,
that
boy.
Makes him a congenital liar. Who was the chief propaganda officer for the TSA, has zero background security. He was a front man for the Beach Boys.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And if you get in there, look at Gomez. The guy was the head of the California Highway Patrol. Look at his bio. You will never find the word aviation in it. And the only reference to security has to do with some company he was corporate director of. So the people in there do absolutely nothing, have no idea what they're doing, and they don't bother going and talk to people like Bogdan who could solve many of these problems.
Steve, just a minute remaining. What's your assessment of the work of the 9/11 Commission?
I think it was a big hoax, and it was a big fraud designed to steer people away from the truth, and I said get them embroiled in issues dealing with non-moneyed outfits such as the FBI and the CIA, and all they did say, we need more money. It was a big lie to the American people.
Well, I concur. I went to Washington, and I sat through 2 days of those hearings, and I came away saying, this is a game of insider ping-pong by policy wonks. And all they were doing was ping-ponging back and forth with a lot of bureaucratic talk, but they were not interested in really ferreting out the truth. And the way they treated Bogdan is just one example of that, but there are so many questions that they didn't even ask, much less answer, that we cannot conclude that the 9/11 Commission really offered us much whatsoever.
Well, they had all this information. We gave them tons of information. The stats were good, but remember, the people on the 9/11 Commission are the very politicians who've created, fostered, and nurtured this system and facade of security.
Steve, we're out of time. It's a pleasure to know you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being a courageous American.
Thank you, sir.
Steve Elson, former Navy SEAL, former member of the FAA Red Team. I'm Peter B. Collins. Assemblyman John Laird will join us to kick off the next hour.
Tell you what I got cooking, Dinners Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinners Ready?
That's right, Dinners Ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. According to one Iraqi official, Saddam Hussein could be executed within the hour, but there's been no official announcement. Even President Bush is awaiting word.
I'm Mark Noller in Crawford, Texas. Having referred to Saddam Hussein as a brutal murderer, there's no question that President Bush thinks Saddam deserves to be executed. But the White House does not want to be seen in any way pulling strings or orchestrating the imposition of the death sentence, pointing out that it's a matter to be handled by the sovereign nation of Iraq.
The execution could be carried out soon after the U.S. military hands Saddam over to the Iraqis. He will go to the gallows along with his half-brother. The hanging will be videotaped and witnesses will be present. CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston is in Baghdad.
Iraq's national security advisor told CBS News that Saddam's body will be treated with respect.
He will have the
the same, if you like, ceremony or ritual and according to the Islamic law, and he will be buried according to the Islamic ritual.
There is concern the violence could increase even further after the execution. The U.S. military is on high alert. Three more Marines have been killed in fighting in Anbar province. That makes December the deadliest month for U.S. troops this year. 6 days of national mourning have begun for former President Gerald Ford. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is in Palm Desert, California.
The series of services honoring President Ford began here in the place he called home for three decades and in the church he attended. A Marine band played as the casket arrived. A multi-service honor guard brought the casket into the church, and Mr. Ford's pastor prayed.
Deliver your servant Gerald, O sovereign Lord Christ, from all evil.
After a private family prayer service, the public was allowed to view the casket and pay respects. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Palm Desert, California.
Denver's second big snowstorm of the holidays has canceled more flights, stranded bus travelers, and motorists on area roadways. The National Guard's been called out to help. Polly White is with the Office of Emergency Management.
It looked a little bit like the snow was letting up, and I think that these folks thought that, you know, maybe they could get to the store and get back in time, and then the wind picks up and the snow drifts come up and they find themselves in a jam that they just can't get out of.
This latest storm could dump a foot or more of snow.